Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Yeah, Jordan.
Dan!
Yeah.
Did you ever get a grade bumped up?
What are you talking about,
Did you ever, in high school or elementary school, did you ever, like, get a teacher to go, like, oh, no, okay, I'll give you a B instead of a C?
I'm certain I did, but it's very unmemorable.
It's very unmemorable?
The only kind of grade thing I can remember that I didn't deserve at all, I think I probably mentioned this on the show even, is I dropped out in my senior year of high school, but I also skipped, like, 2/3 of my junior year.
Right, I just didn't go to school. You just didn't go.
Yeah, because I was too depressed and all a mess. And so, like, in that time, of course, I failed all of the classes that
I was taking. Well, yeah.
In my junior year.
Did you fail all of them?
I didn't. I showed up and took a couple of the finals. I took my French final.
Yeah.
And my teacher was just like, you got, like, a 98% on the final. I'm just going to give you credit for the class. I don't even care. Like, that sort of thing. And
I also like him.
I also got an A in broadcast production because that was one of the only classes I actually did show up
for.
Yeah,
of course.
The teacher was super cool, and I could handle that environment.
See, now that's
even
great,
in my depressed state.
That's a great backstory for you.
Yeah.
Everything in high school was a disaster, but broadcast production. There you go.
Yep.
That's fucking diamonds.
And now I'm producing this show where I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about Alex Jones.
That's correct.
And I don't know any French.
Trémol.
Ah.
You said that on two episodes back, or last episode.
I was just a
un peu de français. que tu connais.
I was just channeling my inner Pierre.
Oh, c'est bien.
Yeah.
So Jordan, today we have a monumental episode to go over that will cover the days of March 5th and 6th. Just Tuesday and Thursday of this week, if you're paying attention to days of the week, there's some crazy bullshit that happens on this show, and an announcement that will shake the core of the very info war. And there's a lot of things that we can speculate about what it means, why it's happening, what's going on, and we'll get to that quite a ways down the road. But before we get to today's episode, I'd like to give a shout out to a couple of new people who have signed up and are supporting the show.
Hooray!
So first of all, I'd like to say thank you to Hayden with an O. Hey, Don.
Hayden.
I'm bad at pronouncing
names. We're bad at this.
Anyway, thank you very much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Hayden.
Thank you.
Next, Nicole. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you very much, Nicole.
Next, Alex. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so
much, Alex.
That actually is Alex Jones, but it's the British presenter, Alex
Jones. Oh, okay. Well, that's nice of her.
It's not her.
Oh, okay.
Also,
it's not her.
Dylan, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you very much, Dylan.
And next, I'd like to say thank you to somebody who donated on a little bit of an elevated level.
What? We
appreciate it very much. So, Clint, thank you so much. You are now a globalist.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bow, bow, bow,
bow, bow. Thank you, Clint. If you're out there listening and you're thinking, hey, I like what these guys do, I'd like to support the show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com. There's a button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Indeed, it would be nice.
Also, I appreciate no one giving us shade about our last episode being pretty short. we had some scheduling issues, and I'm trying to find a new apartment. So
sometimes
our bandwidth is going to be a little bit lower than it is normally, but we'll get back to full beefy episodes across the board.
We're just trying to average out the week. Like, if we give you a 5-hour episode, then you got to be fine with it because you're still getting an average of about 9 hours of Knowledge Fight a week.
Last week, man.
It's all the same.
Once we get a new Knowledge Fight HQ, we'll be in much better shape to do things. There's a lot of stresses in dealing with Chicago real estate. And trying to find a new apartment.
Yeah.
It's a real hassle.
Yeah.
It's cutting into my life a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciate, people understanding. So, Jordan, today, this, two-part, episode. Well, I mean, it's one part for us, but it's 2 days.
Right, the fifth and sixth.
Is crazy. It's a lot of, lunatic nonsense. And here is an out of context drop from today's show.
And so Tommy Robinson is a modern day Moses.
Ooh, not
good. Oh, that's not a good start. That's not a good start. No, I wouldn't want to do that.
Oh, no. But here is how we start things off on March 5th.
Well, here we are. It's already Tuesday. It's amazing. Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. I am your host, Alex Jones, here in the new studio. You've seen us do a lot of live reports and had political coverage of big events like State of the Union here in our new state-of-the-art studio. We've got three nice studios here now and are ready to start expanding to about 20 hours a day live.
What are you about to drop?
6 months behind getting that done because
fucking
of all the obvious globalist attempts to shut us down and block us, but we are moving forward thanks to your prayers and thanks to your support.
So Alex has a new studio that he's been saying he's been working on for a really long time.
Yeah.
And fine.
His dad's basement?
Could be. I don't know.
is he moving back in?
I just hate this. It's been so long that he's been saying he's going to expand to like a 24-hour style. Now he's saying 20 hours. I don't know why he doesn't go for the extra four. If you're, you know, go.
Who's going to fill him?
When you go halfway or half speed, that's when you get hurt. That's
yeah.
what I always
Is
heard
that what you-
playing football. And I imagine he did as well back when he played football.
That's why he got hurt.
I think going 20 hours is the half speed of a full-time news network.
What is he on now?
Well, you got like what? 3 hours of Dave and Knight, 4 hours of Alex.
Ooh.
Maybe it's 2 of Dave and Knight, 4 of Alex and 2 of the War Room. So 8 hours total.
I mean, well then 20 hours is a big jump.
Yeah. More than 100% gain.
I would start with 16 hours. You know what? Even better than that, I would start with 12. Just put your toes in the water there. See if you got somebody who can step up.
Better than that, roll it back to 6.
Better than that, quit.
Yeah.
Go home.
Why not? I don't believe a word of this. I mean, I believe he has a new studio because he has been talking about that being almost ready for a really long time. So I believe that they finally finished that studio and are making use of it. I don't believe he's going to go to 20 hours a day. I think that's just the brash talk that he's been going on for a long time. But the fact that he's in the position that he's in now with like all of this, like getting off of all of these platforms, everything rolling back, he's talked very openly. And even on the Rogan episode, he was talking about how getting kicked off of like Spotify and iTunes like really hurt him.
Yeah.
Because people just become attenuated or what would be, they just get in the habit of listening through mediums like that. And when you disrupt that information stream, they don't think about it to be like, oh, I need to remember to go listen to this.
Nobody goes to the second page of Google.
Right. Or
it's that.
Or if you subscribe
that extra
to something,
click.
You're more
yeah.
likely to listen to it. And when that subscription isn't there anymore, you're not necessarily going to go to the webpage.
There's some laziness.
And so Alex has even talked about how like that really hurt them and stuff like that. So if you think about how much money he had to have lost from all of that going away, it's huge. And so the idea that he's talking about expanding, he has this new studio, that just strikes me as blustery nonsense. He'd already paid for the studio and this is posturing.
Right.
Or very clear indication that he has some sort of benefactor.
Massive amount of
angel
dark money
investor.
Being, yeah.
Or
yeah,
it
yeah.
could be dark money or an angel investor.
Right.
Somebody
right, right.
keeping him afloat.
Could be Peter
like
Thiel.
Right.
Why
or
not?
Or Buckley found a bucket of gold.
That
I don't
could
know.
Be. That
I don't know.
It's Buckley something. Lives the type of life where he might just find a bucket of gold.
Right.
That's obvious.
That sort of thing strikes me as that being a possibility. But that's not the most important thing.
Did you know that Jim Baker has started selling buckets of gold?
I don't doubt that at all.
It'll last the apocalypse.
So that's not the most important thing that happens in the intro to this episode. I should tell you, the most important thing is that Alex is wearing a cowboy hat.
Oh, God.
And I thought I'd celebrate the new studio today by wearing a Stetson Open Road cowboy hat, Silver Belly. This is the same hat my dad's dad wore his whole life and I knew him. I got reminded of these, that Paul Watson's here in town. And about, it was like 15 years ago that Paul has a whole different personality when you put a cowboy hat on him. So we're going to put a cowboy hat on him and get his great
fucking shoot
Texas,
me.
Imitation.
We know from listening to 2009, 2008 episodes that it's Steve Watson who Alex bullies into doing a cowboy impression. Alex has mixed up the Watson brothers, I believe.
That's right.
Or maybe he just did it to both of them. That's
yeah,
entirely possible,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he is a dick.
Yeah, that is. That's fair. So Paul Joseph Watson is in town. He is in no longer occupied Texas, visiting Austin, having a hangout with Alex.
Why?
Well, here's the thing. We could play a lot of games with this. There's a lot of possibilities. Number one, we could be speculative and we could say this means something.
Right.
Because Paul Joseph Watson almost never leaves the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
He almost never comes to Austin. I think in the time that I've been listening, maybe twice before I've seen him come to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And you could imagine, like, well, maybe Alex knows something's coming. Roger's under a gag order. He can't do the war room anymore, which Alex brings up later in this episode.
Of course.
Roger can't even do any InfoWars shows anymore, so he's gone.
And we're still paying him!
Right, and so Alex might need Paul to come. And we can speculate about that. Or there's the very simple explanation that Paul was at CPAC. So he
that makes sense.
He might have come for that, and while he's in the United States, come hang out with Alex, pay face service or
Would
whatever.
Would CPAC let Paul Joseph Watson in?
No, he was like Laura Loomer and all of them just hanging around, which hurts the argument that he was coming for that.
Yeah.
And last year he talked about how CPAC is a bunch of cucks.
Well, I mean, you know, not wrong.
It doesn't seem like the sort of thing that would get him out of the United Kingdom. I'm playing coy. I know the answer to
God
this.
God damn you, but, you son of a bitch.
But there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, there's this could mean something, or it could just be he's coming to CPAC.
I'm leaning towards it doesn't mean anything.
Well, we will have to see
based
later
on your
in this episode.
Based on your tease.
It does mean that Alex is wearing a fucking sweet cowboy hat.
That's true.
So, that's cool. So, Alex gets to his lead story of the day, and guess what? It involves pornography, would you believe?
Oh, we're talking Bolsonaro, baby!
Nope.
What?
Nope.
We're not?
This is from Tuesday.
Oh, this is from Tuesday.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he could, no, cause that was Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. Shit.
No. So, no, it's not about that. And
Alex sent Bolsonaro the video that he tweeted later, right?
Hey, Jerry, buddy, I got something good for you.
Listen, you ever hear of a golden shower?
So Alex has a big story out of the UK that he wants to talk about, and it has to do with them, creating a new system to try and get kids, to not be able to access porn on the internet. I have some thoughts about that, but my chief thought is what Alex is about to say is stupid and inaccurate.
The headlines on InfoWars.com as well. UK blocks all porn that's free, or free porn blocked. Free porn blocked in the UK. You go to InfoWars.com.
And free porn everywhere.
Headline that the national move in the UK to ban, quote, free porn is really an internet tax and an internet tracking system. So this is it. This is the plan. And I told folks a couple years ago when they were talking about it that this is what's being implemented. But it's sold as just, oh, you pay the government and then they put software on your computer that watches what you do and you give them your ID, your passport, and now you can go look at any porn you want. So I'm going to say that again.
Dumps like a truck.
The government is going to have a dossier.
I'm gonna say
they
it
already
again.
Do.
Hit me.
But publicly, you're going to opt into a dossier.
A dirty,
that knows
dirty
what
one.
Porn you're watching.
By definition.
So you and your wife, Saturday night, you go in, you turn on the television, you dial into the internet, and you pull up whatever your wife sends
you. I love this story.
That's how it works.
That's how it works.
Now you've got another partner in the bedroom with you. It's called the British government.
Nice.
You understand, it's coming here. This is the model.
Is that a three-way then, or how many people are in Parliament?
That's a lot.
Menage a lots.
Also, very few of whom you would want to be in bed with.
No, only Boris Johnson.
Boris Johnson, really?
For the novelty.
He's a bit chunky for my taste.
Oh, come on, man. Don't fat shame.
I'm not fat shaming.
Don't body shame Boris.
It's not a gender thing. It's just a Boris thing.
So here's the thing.
I can't handle that hair and that gut.
The UK isn't banning porn. They're putting into place an age verification system that will require people to prove their age on an age ID system by providing their license or passport in order to access free porn sites on the internet, like Pornhub, YouPorn, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They will only be required to do this one time, as the cookies in their browser will retain that verification and not require it to be put in every time they click on a new porn site.
Ah, they won't allow private browsing. That is bullshit.
No, but I think that you can. I'm not entirely sure how the system works.
If you're private browsing, the cookies get wiped.
I do know from reading this that there isn't a software that you put on your computer.
Yeah, of course not. That would be crazy.
That's an inaccurate part of this. So this makes some sense, although I think it's a little bit of a clunky system. Like, if you have a shared computer, your kids could still easily slip through if you verify your browser. There are other ways, that it seems pretty obvious ways that you could get around this, but that's not really the big issue. The big concern, I would imagine, would be privacy. If you give the government your passport and get an ID code, they can obviously track all the porn you look at. And that does sound kind of scary. Luckily, the government thought about that and offered another way users can get an age ID. From an article in The Sun, quote, "As well as registering with age ID, Brits will also be able to access porn sites using a voucher you can buy from high street shops. Thousands of shops will offer a special ID cards, which users can use to link to an app known as Portis. Through Portis, they can then log into they can log into sites without having to hand over their email address. There's an anonymity with those cards and vouchers that you can buy from any one of a thousand shops in the UK. There's a system that they've built into the program to provide a layer of privacy while still ideally working towards making it harder for kids to find porn. I don't think it's worthwhile. I think you're fighting an uphill battle. But at the same time, I kind of understand, you know, it's insanely easy for people to find porn. And if you want to, like back in the day when it was much harder, when there were just like magazines and stuff like that.
Yeah, that you would wander into the forest and find.
Right, but that was all random.
Yeah.
It was easier to restrict access to it, to those sorts of things. And now with the internet the way it is, if you still want to make it a rule that this stuff is prohibited to people under 18, you do need to come up with a new novel system to be able to do that.
Right, because functionally it's not a rule.
No.
Like when I'm going to tell you this right now, Dan, I committed a crime. Mm. When I was 16 and they had that little are you 18 yes or no button? Mm-hmm. Oh, I pressed yes.
Look behind you. Cherries and berries.
Whoa. Oh no. Oh no.
This has been a 2-year sting operation.
God damn it.
My name's not Dan.
My name's Poor Dan.
My name's Portis. Look, I 100%. It's so easy. You just click on something, and they're like, we'll take your word for it.
Yeah. It's just them covering their asses. It's
and
not
now,
them actually stopping
and now
underage
with these tube
people
sites and
porn.
Stuff like that, there isn't even that landing page where you have to say you're an adult.
No, why would you?
So it's, I get it, but I also think it's probably ineffective. But the arguments towards, like, it creating a dossier of people's habits and stuff like that is they have parts of the system that are in place specifically to assuage that concern.
Yeah.
So
I suppose the only thing that I would say, my only take on this, which is, look, whatever, you guys do whatever you feel is right. But if there's one thing I know about humanity from reading all of human history,
they will find
it is
porn.
That you will not defeat porn. No matter how much you fight against porn,
right.
No matter how much you struggle, porn wins.
People have a drive towards sexuality, sexual expression, and no matter how much you try and repress it in whatever form, it fights through.
One of the ways that so many books that the church banned got around in Europe during the, 1400s to 1800s or whatever it is there was a massive, ring of porn distribution. Like it just, and it was just like, weird illuminated texts, you know, but that ring was so huge that stuff like, the Bible. Literally the Bible, which people weren't even allowed to read because the use was restricted, was also being sent along with tits, you know, like all of that underground distribution. Not going to win against porn.
And for all of its exploitive character at periods throughout the porn industry's history, it has always also been, like, even what you're describing is a piece of the vanguard of speech.
Yeah.
That porn has been on the tip of. It's the tip of the spear in many ways. Of a lot of that free speech stuff.
That is an apt metaphor.
Yeah. Trying to fight it too hard on many fronts is, it generally ends up being a battle you don't want to fight.
Right.
It ends up becoming a whole mess, especially because the times that they've tried in terms of our government, it becomes like this confusing, nonsensical
thing. I know it
thing.
When I see it. Like, what does that even fucking mean,
right,
lady?
Definitionally, you'll never really be able to nail down what is pornographic.
I will tell you that a video of somebody peeing on somebody in Carnival while they jerk off, I'm going to go with that's probably porn.
Yeah, I think so.
I would say that.
It's on the line. I don't know. So, in this next clip, Alex is certain that the UK isn't just trying to stop kids from looking at pornography, as their stated objective would lead you to believe, because he knows more about these people.
Oh, okay.
But any claims that the government of the UK or the US government or anybody trying to defend kids from porn is asinine, because I've got stories right here in my stack. Aggressive promotion of homosexuality, school stops LGBT lesson after backlash from angry parents. It's being reported by the Daily Mail, by RT and others, and you learn it's Muslims. So say what you want about Muslims who throw gays off buildings and cut women's genitals off. I disagree with that. I'm a libertarian.
Cool.
But I don't think you should have LGBTP sexualizing kids. That's the pedophile side of that, which some groups are officially adopting the P now. They're saying, yes, we are pedophilia.
Nope.
Jair Bolsonaro is. Hey.
That's
I'm really going to ride that horse for a while.
Oh, does the PP?
Yeah.
Let's let that die now, lest this become a runner for the whole show.
Okay, sorry about that.
So the story that Alex is talking about here is about a school in Saltley, Birmingham in the UK, where students are being taught about LGBT issues with the goal of curbing homophobia early in their lives. This educational program was being taught by a man named Andrew Moffat, who, interestingly, is one of 10 teachers out of all the teachers in the world who is on a shortlist to win the Varkey Foundation Global Teacher Prize for Best Teacher in the World. There were over 10,000 nominees from 179 countries for this honor, and he's one of the top 10 best teachers in the world.
Yeah, because he's a pornographer, Dan.
He's not. Moffat created a program called No Outsiders that seeks to promote tolerance and understanding in school-aged children, which was based on his extensive study in the field of education. Unfortunately, he ended up getting a ton of threats from Muslim and Christian parents who felt that his program was sexual, which is kind of an indication that these parents could have used a program like Moffat's back when they were in school.
Right.
For his part, Moffat is taking all the backlash in stride. He was quoted in The Guardian as saying, quote, "I'm quite pragmatic. We've got to find a way to engage parents on some issues that many find challenging. Yes, at the moment we're having challenges in my own school, but it's about not running away from those challenges. What alternative is there?" So you have this situation where there were a bunch of parents who complained about this program that was seeking to promote tolerance.
And I will go on record as saying they can all go fuck themselves.
Sure.
I understand their position. I understand where they're coming from, and they should also go fuck themselves.
There were parents who complained, or Christian parents who complained, but the story is largely reported as like tons of Muslim parents because it was in a largely Muslim school.
So that
part of it is kind of superfluous to it just being religious parents didn't like this being in the school.
I'm sure I'm sure the people writing the article definitely had their own little bit of, it was Muslims who were, there was a little bit of that there.
Alex certainly includes that in his editorial.
Hey, doesn't it?
Position. So the issue here is that the school ended up kowtowing to the pressure and they removed it from the curriculum.
I hate people.
And, so, I mean, I think it's pretty terrible, but even if you're Alex, the problem's solved. I mean, that program is kicked out of schools. So, or at least that school.
Yeah, even if you're Alex, the world is a worse place. So good for you, you fucking piece of shit.
Right. And so Alex thinks that the only reason that, he seems to be operating under the assumption that at this school, the program still continues, but because these Muslim people made a big stink about it, they were allowed, to get out of the, program.
Yeah.
Like the Muslim parents complained, and so Muslims
just
get
that,
out.
Oh my God.
But Christians are still forced.
Oh my God, I hate him.
Right. And that leads him to say some things that are real dumb.
I mean, if that happened at the park, you'd go to jail. If a man walked over at the park while you're sitting there grilling hamburgers and said, "I'm going to teach your daughter and your son about sex,"
did you
be arrested as being a pervert? But now if it's done officially by the school, it's okay. So meanwhile, just today, you've got massive arrest of giant Islamic grooming gangs of little girls. And then you've got the leftist allied with radical Islam saying, come on in, do whatever you want. But now the Muslims are saying, hey, you're not going to teach my 5-year-old how to give a blowjob. It's what they teach in UK schools.
No, it's
not. Or that he's, or going to put a dress on him. And so now the left's saying, it's okay. Muslims can opt out, but no one else can. And you'll be arrested if you're not a Muslim. So see, this is how the whole leftist system works. Total and complete tyranny.
None of that is true
None
in terms of,
it. Of
the response to the school's program. And I was curious about this idea that he was putting forth about the idea that just recently there was a large Muslim grooming gang that got arrested. Pedophile grooming gang. So in the last month or so, there have been two stories about groups of child abusers who have been arrested by groups of child abusers. One story in the Daily Mail talks about 5 men and 1 woman being arrested in Bury. And the Epoch Times ran a story about 33 men being arrested for sexually abusing children between 2002 and 2005 in West Yorkshire. Those are the only big stories that you can really find from recent times about England and groups engaged kind of, in child exploitation.
Yeah, yeah.
Neither of these stories includes any indication or even insinuation as to the race or religious persuasion of those arrested. And this brings us to an important piece of the equation. Right-wing manipulation of a serious issue for political gain. There's a prevailing idea that a vast majority of grooming gang behavior is perpetrated by Asian individuals, the demographic category in the United Kingdom that involves people of Middle Eastern descent. This is based on a report put out by the think tank Quilliam that purported to show that 84% of grooming gang offenders are, quote, of Pakistani origin with Muslim heritage. This is accepted as gospel by people in the xenophobic, hyper-nationalist bent, folks like Tommy Robinson and Alex Jones.
And Moses.
Sure.
And Moses.
Sure. However, people who have reviewed their report have found some serious problems with it. The largest is that, quote, grooming gang offender is not a legal designation that exists in the United Kingdom. The behavior that it describes, group-based child sexual exploitation, could be counted as any number of offenses depending on investigatory circumstances.
Yeah.
So it goes to, like, what was actually being happened here? Are you conspiring to prostitute somebody?
Right.
Are you actually assaulting the child? That
right.
sort of thing.
Right, right, right.
So, according to The Guardian, quote, Nazir Afzal is the Crown Prosecutor Service's former lead on child sexual abuse and the prosecutor most responsible for bringing down grooming gangs. The media, he observes, pounces on cases involving Asians, but often ignores those involving white perpetrators.
Surprise.
They go on to point out that an offender's ethnicity is often only recorded when they're non-white, which makes studying the statistics
Surprise.
Even more complicated.
Surprise.
Quilliam claimed to have found 58 cases of grooming gang arrests between 2005 and 2017. But problematically, the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Center found 57 cases of group-based child sexual exploitation arrests in just 2012, which calls into serious question how thorough Quilliam was with their data sets. The group Regressive Left Media did a completely savage takedown of this study, which cuts through all the problems in their definitions, sources, methodology, analysis, and everything else about the report, including links to stories of over 100 white perpetrators that match Quilliam's data requirements who were completely ignored by the report, a list that the Regressive Left Media compiled in, quote, less than half a day.
Yeah, that sounds right.
They just completely ignored all this stuff.
Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you?
So
if you were a fucking propagandist piece of shit who wanted to demonize another race.
Ella Cockbain, a lecturer in security and crime science and an expert on child sexual exploitation.
All right, hold the fucking phone.
Are you just going to make fun of names?
No, I'm just saying that that's like a weird nominative determinism kind of thing where your name kind of...
Cockbain?
You know, like I'm a baker.
You're just doing it because of like Storm Bane, right?
My name's Baker and
you're
so I became
about
a baker.
That
like,
guy
it's
from
just,
Game of Thrones.
It's just
right?
nominative determinism. I'm just sorry. I'm sorry. It's not my fault. I didn't do it.
So she speculated that Quilliam put out this report out of a desire for funding. And if that's the case, it worked. They received $20,000 from Sam Harris and over $1 million in a grant from the John Templeton Foundation. Interestingly, a peer-reviewed study in Association Today found that the Templeton Foundation was part of a network of foundations that, quote, supplied funds to the five organizations involved in actively mobilizing Tea Party activists. Templeton even financed a group called Let Freedom Ring, which was deeply involved in Tea Party activity. And Templeton Jr., the head of the foundation, was listed in a 2011 Mother Jones piece as being among the donors lauded at a Coke industry seminar as having given over $1 million to Coke-aligned causes.
If he did nothing else, that would be enough to know he was an evil piece of shit.
Mm. Well, I mean, it was his dad who started the whole foundation, but the junior seems to be more active in a lot of this stuff. This is the Overton window shifting to bigotry, Jordan. Billionaires finance shady organizations to put out terrible studies to give cover to extremists like Tommy Robinson and Alex Jones so they can work to distract the public from working to actually solve the world's biggest problem, namely that there are billionaires. But I think what's probably the most important part about all this is the victims' voices that are lost in the shuffle. They're basically just being used as props by these bigots to run their anti-diversity scams, and that is a tragedy. The Independent ran a piece in March 2018 written by a woman who survived being kidnapped and abused by the Rotherham grooming gang, and I think her perspective is one that Alex needs to hear. Quote, in mainland Europe, conflict surrounding immigrants and refugees has been fueled by stories of women being raped by migrants. People have been calling for violent action against any Muslims and have declared war on Islam. As someone who has experienced life inside a grooming gang, I can tell you with certainty that none of this is likely to make a difference to the behaviors of groomers. Like terrorists, they firmly believe that their crimes, the crimes they carry out, are justified by their religious beliefs. If anything, rising anti-Muslim hate will probably make groomers stronger in their convictions and drive ordinary young Muslim men towards fundamentalism, grooming gangs, and terrorism.
Of course.
My main perpetrator quoted scriptures from the Quran to me as he beat me. However, almost identical scriptures, and then parentheses, about the stoning to death of virgins who don't scream when they're raped, can also be found in the Bible. The problem isn't the text itself, it's how it's fundamentally interpreted. In fact, there are many cases of Bible quotes being used to justify terrible human injustices.
Like what? Slavery?
Like the enslavement of people from Africa.
Odd.
Anti-Semitism. Huh? Anti-violence towards LGBT people.
No.
All the major world religions, including Hinduism and Buddhism, have also at some point or at some time been associated with extreme human rights abuses against men, women, and children.
Well, Myanmar? No.
I experienced horrific religiously sanctioned sexual violence and torture, so I definitely believe that we need to be aware of religious extremism as something potentially harmful, so that we can protect people from it. But for Tommy Robinson and his followers to focus on an entire religion based on a cruel misinterpretation of some scriptures by some people is unhelpful, to say the least. Many of his religious theories and conjecture are not anything I can relate to in my real life experience. So, what we walk away from all that with is this idea about grooming gangs is generally used as propaganda against Muslims based on this dubious origin and dubiously written report by the Quilliam think tank.
Yeah.
And then people who have experienced this have a different perspective on it than people who, like Tommy Robinson, are trying to create a career out of fighting against Muslims in using people like this survivor as a shield from criticism.
Could you at any point actually try to stop the theoretical epidemic caused by Muslims, or do you just really want to hate Muslims?
I think it's the latter.
It's so fucking infuriating.
It is.
And do you know the thing that makes it even more obvious? The whole reason behind the hatred of the LGBT. God damn it.
Wow.
I cannot say it.
LGBT.
God. The point being, he is saying like, oh, this program to talk to kids about, the LGBTQ community. It's clearly teaching them oral sex, which is like, no, you're obviously, you're obviously signaling that your real problem.
I was going to hold off on that conversation because he says something way worse than
Of course.
Bit.
Yeah. So it's just that he thinks it's gross.
And he thinks
you can't possibly think
that people's identities are intrinsically sexual.
Yeah.
Cause it's the only way that Alex can understand that stuff.
Exactly.
So yeah.
It's not just like, hey, if you see two dudes hanging out, you know, be cool. Like that's it. That's the program.
More or less.
Not like, hey, here's how you blow somebody.
Right.
You're going to want to put an ice cube. It's not fucking Maxim magazine.
Nope.
God damn it.
Yep. So I think all that's gross. I think what he's doing is gross. And I think that when you look into the realities about these issues that he's talking about, it becomes more clear how gross it is.
Yeah.
And when you read the stories of people who are involved, it's very tragic. And it is a real issue. But you're never going to solve the issue if you focus on just like, this is all Muslims doing it, let's crack down on Muslims and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It is, there are group-based child exploiters in the world.
Right.
You just have to deal with that reality and then work on how you deal with that.
And it's such the, like, it is not a religion. It's not the text.
No.
People are going to find a way to pervert any text into something that can be used as a bludgeon towards people they don't like.
I mean, you and I both have been in like literature classes in our lives mm-hmm. and had workshops and stuff like that. And just from like reading a book, like you read, I don't know why I keep bringing up 100 Years of Solitude on this show. But
I know that's a weird one, but
it's one that I read in a workshop setting. So maybe that's why it sticks out more in my
head. Right.
But even a book like that, I know there's magical realism to it and what have you, but even that, you sit down and someone could read it and take away one thing and you could take an entirely different thing away.
Yeah.
Is that Marquez's fault? Is that the book's fault? Or is it you bring something different to it and you can interpret even novels profoundly differently than somebody else?
Yeah. There's only one book that I think everybody interprets the same way, and that's a separate piece. Have you ever read that?
No.
It's a book that everybody pretty much interprets as being terrible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bad book. I think the same thing is said about Gorilla Mindset.
Yeah. It's not that bad.
So in this next clip.
That's not true. It's actually a really good book, but when you're like 16 and you read it, you're like, fuck you. But then later on you read it and you're like, oh shit, this is actually pretty great.
In this next.
Infuriating.
In this next clip, Alex brags about going on Rogan, and then he implies that, he's got something else in the works.
I didn't tell you I was going on Joe Rogan. We just snuck attack. And I can tell you there's a bunch of other sneak attacks coming very soon, just as big.
Sneaky snake attacks.
Or bigger.
Don't worry. One of them is not him coming on our show. That will not be one of the sneak attacks.
Unless he literally sneak attacks us.
Yeah, if he shows up here.
Yeah, if he shows up and breaks through your door.
I think I still have control over hitting the boop off button.
He's a big guy.
That's true. He's very violent.
He's very violent.
Yeah, who knows. So I told you to hold your tongue a tiny bit on that idea that you were putting forth about him interpreting all of these school programs as being sexual. And it was because this next clip where he gets real gross.
It's Muslims. They're upset that there's grown adults talking to their five-year-old sons and daughters about their sexual preference because kids aren't thinking about that. I mean, if a dad or mom started asking their five-year-old about, have you heard about sadomasochism? Have you heard about sex changes in children? Have you heard about fisting? This is what they teach five-year-olds. And the kids are like, what? And they're just totally screwing them up. I mean, it's irrevocable pedophilic assault, but it's all done by the leftist social engineers. So it's all A-okay.
Can you imagine that? Like, can you imagine anybody being like, hey, child, what do you think about fisting?
Sammy, what do you think about fisting? I don't know how to add yet.
That's so fucked up even that he thinks that's that's his fake version of what's happening.
Yeah.
So fucked up.
Even his evil globalists would be like, whoa, guys, let's calm it down.
What good
is until they're nine.
Yeah. I just, oh God, it's weird. It's very weird.
It's so, like, I really, listen to that and get bummed out by sexual preference. Like, the word sexual being in there, as opposed, is not divorced from fucking.
Right.
It is a gender thing.
Well, it's not divorced from fucking for him. And that's
right.
The big deal.
Exactly. That's
the big issue.
That's the thing. But it's also because it can be misconstrued by even regular dumb people.
Right.
Not crazy lunatic dumb people.
He can't disentangle in his mind the idea that anyone would teach people about, like, gay people existing and it not be, like, them having a conversation where, like, it's fun to suck dicks.
Yeah. Like,
what? What do you imagine?
Also, that's rude. It should be. It can be fun to suck dicks, but not all the time.
Well, it's that's what he imagines. He imagines it's like some sort of indoctrination type thing where it's like, well, here now we have a PowerPoint presentation on felching.
Yeah,
like it's not. That's not the real world.
I would be interested in a PowerPoint presentation on felching, though.
You should talk to my guy Bolsonaro. I think he's got some links.
Hey, there we go. Take that. It shouldn't be a running joke.
Yeah, whatever. So in this next clip, Alex gets super weird because as we discussed earlier, this idea that he's putting forth about the idea that Muslim parents complained about this. Now, Muslims can get out of this gay indoctrination
whatever. But Christians can't.
And he's assuming, because he hasn't read any of these articles, that only Muslims complained about this stuff.
Right.
He's now decided that Muslims are real cool.
Oh.
This is one of the-
Okay.
This is one of the weirdest turns.
We're gonna take a harsh turn.
This makes no sense. and I don't think he's gonna be able to keep this up.
But satire!
But it does tell you where his truest bigotries lie.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm gonna say it right now on air. I take my hat off to the Islamic Muslim community of the UK because they're the only groups consistently protesting and saying no to children as young as 3 years of age being taught that they're sexually active, that boys are girls, that girls are boys. And they've been protesting and saying no to the pedophile cult that runs the UK. And so I salute the Muslims in the UK for being better people than the average British citizen and better than the police and better than the government that's run by pedophiles.
That is weird. That is really weird. Because you know what he's doing? He's saluting them for being sufficiently homophobic.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's creating false versions of what he thinks the UK Muslim community is, and then being like, yeah.
You went from, like, a week ago being like, Muslims throw acid in people's faces and they're the only ones who kill people, to being like,
earlier in this
you gotta
episode,
give it
he
up
says
to
he throws, they throw gays off buildings.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
talking about grooming gays
they're
two clips ago.
Sufficiently better for throwing gays. God. It's so fucking terrifying to continue listening to this, because this is present day Alex. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to live in 2019 and think,
this was this
man,
week.
We're fucking past you. Uh-huh. We're done with your bullshit. And it's like, nope, guess what? It's still there. It's still fucking there all the time.
And it's always confusing. Like, I promise you there's no, like, greater context to this that makes it make sense.
No.
He's just glad that these Muslim parents complained about this tolerance program
right.
at this school, and now he's decided these Muslims get it.
Well,
it's like, what the fuck? The last, like, 3 years of your show has been nothing but fucking Islamophobic rants. He did that thing a couple of years back about where he's like, I'm satirically going to suggest kicking all Muslims out of the country
yeah.
to get a conversation going.
Of course.
What the fuck is this?
What are you doing?
It's nonsensical.
Well, you gotta give it up to those Somali pirates. You gotta give it up to him.
So it's also super confusing, because like I said, he was talking about the grooming gang stuff earlier in this episode that we addressed. And he says something in this next clip that sort of is like, ah.
I have to say it. Maybe the UK will be liberated by Islam. I mean, they still have a lot of child kidnapping and a lot of sex slaves, but, you know, they kind of stop at 12-year-olds.
What?
And so
what?
Maybe we're being liberated by Islam, actually.
What?
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 Who? Why? What? Where would you even? You what? Can't confidently say they stop at 12-year-olds with nothing behind it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing behind that.
Nothing.
There couldn't even be a headline behind that.
And
there is nothing behind
and
that.
And even if there were, I don't see any reason why that's okay. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't get what he's doing.
Well, who would even do that study? What kind of lunatic would be like, well, we got to figure out the age point at which these child grooming gangs quit. So,
right.
Headline, grooming gangs usually stop at 12.
They're super into exploitation and kidnapping and enslaving people, but you bring them a 10-year-old and they're like, hey, guys, we have limits.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
If you bring them a 13-year-old that looks like a 10-year-old, well, that's good. That's fair game.
It's debatable.
That's fair game.
You know, that's a case-by-case basis
yeah.
thing. That depends on the gang. This is crazy. This is nonsensical.
Bananas.
And I don't understand really what the point is. And the only thing I can walk away from it with is that his anger at Muslims is conditional. His discomfort and very serious problems with the gay community and the LGBT community is not.
It's paramount.
Yes. I think that that is what we can take away from that solidly. The
right.
rest of it, very confusing. I'm
right.
not sure. And I'm positive. Within days, he will start yelling about Muslims.
Oh, of course.
Undoubtedly.
It is that kind of brief moment where it almost seems like he realizes that Christian extremists like himself have far more in common with Muslim extremists.
That's possible too.
Than they do with anybody else.
That might be.
Like, it's that brief moment of like, hey man, you wanna do and I wanna kill people too, but at least
so
we can both agree
let's
gays
up,
are bad.
Let's team up and make society super oppressive,
yeah.
and then we'll fight.
And then we'll fight, yeah, yeah.
That could be a part of it.
Yeah.
But.
Fucked up.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I also extend the possibility that he's just trying to troll for, like, media attention. And
that's
hoping
possible.
Somebody picks that up as,
yeah.
Like, isn't this fucked
Alex
up?
Alex Jones changes his stance on, yeah.
Right. Someone yeah. misreports something, and
right.
then he's like, oh, this fake news is saying I like Muslims. I'll tell you what, I'm going to double down. I hate them.
Yeah.
Something like that. Jared Holt over at Right Wing Watch thinks he can take clips of me. Something like that.
Yeah.
They complain
yeah.
about him later, too.
Oh, really?
It's really funny.
Jared Holt?
Yeah.
By name?
Paul Joseph Watson apparently ran into him at CPAC. We're not going to listen to the clip of it because it's actually more boring than just saying that that happened.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty great.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Alex has another big breaking story, and it has to do with Paul and Alex like to talk about how liberals have Trump derangement syndrome, and that is that anything Trump does is no good, and they're triggered. They're little snowflakes, and they're triggered.
Right.
If we've seen anything since the midterms, it's that – there's a far larger proportion of media figures, on the right, especially, that have an AOC syndrome.
No!
They have a little bit of a problem.
And oh, they're really going.
I think one of the main reasons is that she's one of the only people who can really eat their lunch. In the sense that, like, she engages on social media and dunks on people.
Yeah.
Pretty regularly.
She's better than they are by a wide margin.
She's someone who can penetrate the, like, propaganda games that they play by dunking.
Yeah.
More or less. She's the Rex Chapman of politics.
I knew we were going to get Rex Chapman in here. I knew it.
Can't not bring up dunks.
I knew it was going to happen.
Mention Rex Chapman.
I knew it.
So Alex has a big scoop about AOC. And I have a scoop about that scoop. It's not a scoop.
The next thing I'm going to get to is so big.
It's not.
That I really don't want to just put it out there and not give it the attention it deserves, but I'm going to do it.
You will.
Because my brain thinks a little bit different than a lot of people's.
Yup.
Ha.
And I always kind of have a memory, and I think about how it connects to things and how it ties into other events that have unfolded. And so, yeah, everybody's really excited right now that AOC.
Yeah, you know
me. Mouth, the creature from the methamphetamine lagoon. Everyone is just so excited that she didn't steal $1 million. She didn't steal $2 million. I went in this morning when I saw it into the SEC records.
Bullshit!
And the Federal Election Commission
Bullshit!
Records.
Bullshit!
And that's why she ended up running. She was a front person for Soros money. And didn't just get $18 million. We found other PACs. You'll hear about those in the next few days. Of course, her and her business manager pocketed millions. Totally illegal.
The first thing I would point out is that, first of all, this is nonsense.
I read some of this story and immediately it was, I read the headline and then I read a little bit more and I was like, oh, guys, you are really trying they're throwing everything at the wall.
Because they're very scared.
They're weak.
Especially the con artist variety in the right are very afraid of this.
Right.
So you can easily find FEC data about the funding of AOC's campaign. It would be very hard for them to have pocketed millions considering their hard records reflecting that they only raised a little more than $2 million and had expenditures of approximately $1.6 million for the campaign. The amount even raised from political action committees was only $81,592. So I'm not sure where Alex is getting any of this info from. Also, I have no idea what records from the Securities Exchange Commission.
You know, the SEC.
I don't know what that has to do with any of this.
They take care of the federal filings for campaigns, right?
No.
Oh, they don't?
But I'm really glad to hear Alex is pretending to have read things.
Yeah, no.
Why would you bring the SEC?
That was that was an amazing amount of bullshit right there.
I looked at stock records.
I checked into the FCC.
Sure.
I checked into the OPP.
That right there is a really strong indication that he's making stuff up.
Absolutely.
When he throws, like, I looked into the SEC records about her campaign funding.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. So this is all just part of a right-wing smear trying to allege campaign finance violations on the part of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her staff. I don't pretend to know everything, and if in the next few months there are any indications that they did engage in illegal fundraising, that'll be a problem. And I'll take that when that comes, when there's any proof of it. It doesn't appear that they did from the information available. So the issue at hand is that Saikat Chakrabarty created a political action committee called Brand New Congress and one called Justice Democrats. He also founded Brand New Campaign LLC. What he was attempting to do, and he was very public about this, was he was trying to create a system where it would be possible to run candidates that don't have to spend all their time fundraising. The political action committees would take in donations and recruit candidates to run for offices. The PACs would send some of the money to the LLC, which would provide the services needed for these candidates to run and not have to worry about the elements of running for office that often keeps qualified candidates from even considering running. This is a new fundraising model, so it raises some eyebrows, but their lawyers have vetted what they do, and they insist that it's all completely legal and above board, and people have reviewed it and found that to be accurate.
Yeah, and in fact, I believe whenever they came up with the idea, they were utterly and completely public about, hey, this is our new thing that we're trying. If there's a problem, we're letting you know way up front.
Yeah,
this is going to be a surprise that's going to come out 2 years later.
Nope, and it was very deeply vetted by their lawyers.
We did it. The same day we started it, we told you.
Chakrabarty appeared on the Rachel Maddow Show to discuss this fundraising strategy on May 18th, 2016.
Exactly.
This is something they've been completely transparent about, and Ryan Grimm, the D.C. bureau chief of The Intercept, looked into it back in 2018 and found their practices were all above board, though they looked suspicious on some level. But
right.
Once you look into it, it's completely legit. For at least a year now, Justice Democrats have had a post up on their website explaining how the process works, discussing the legal standards, and highlighting how the money is spent and where it goes, and why the system needs to be set up like that in order to follow the law.
Yeah.
They're very transparent about this.
Oh, insanely so.
What happened is that Alex saw a sensational article in the Washington Times and didn't realize that it was just a smear based on something that got thoroughly debunked and explained a year ago. This is sloppy shit. But it demonstrates how desperate they are, throwing all
really
this spaghetti
desperate.
Against the
yeah,
wall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Trying anything to derail her ability to be on, especially the Oversight Committee. Like,
yeah.
That's a place where people on the right do not want someone like her.
Oh, no.
They do not want.
Because you can't get her. You can't take her down by, like, these smears and shit like that. Those aren't real. You can't take her down.
And
she's better than you.
And she's not beholden to the Democratic Party in
exactly.
a way that a lot of people who... our longtime career politicians are.
Right.
And that is a dangerous variable on that committee. In the same way Omar is as well.
Exactly.
You know, you have
which is part of the reason that the centrist Democrats are aligning so hard with the Republicans
or at least teasing
yeah.
aligning with them.
Yeah.
You know, or at least appearing to be inclined to align with them because it wrecks shop. They have a
yeah.
they have an ability.
We have a whole thing.
Yeah, they have an ability in their capacity as being in the positions they're in to really screw things up for a lot of people who have coasted for a very long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff, as much as Alex likes to pretend that he's above the rigmarole and the bric-a-brac of politics, he's very beholden to a lot of those things because he defines himself as opposed to it.
Yeah.
If what is mainstream changes, what does he do? How does he stay in opposition to the thing that is what mainstream culture turns into?
Yeah.
Then he has to completely change his whole operation. He doesn't want change any more than the people who he complains about.
Yeah.
Do.
You hate the status quo. And that's your status quo. So if the status quo changes, the status quo you've made so much money off of
yep.
hating for 20 years.
Your primary brand is against X.
Yeah.
If X changes, you have to change too.
That's hard.
Right.
That's
you might
hard.
Have to become Y.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And he can't do that.
Can't. So Alex, it turns out, also, this is pretty good. This is pretty good information. He missed a production meeting before this March 5th episode.
Of course.
I don't think they've ever
had,
were.
They had it? Yeah, I was going to say. I think he's missed all of the production meetings
yeah.
ever.
That's the part that I find dubious about this. But this, the way he describes his process in this next clip is so amazing because it's one of those classic instances of someone trying to, I'm hesitant to describe it this way, but it's when someone tries to take their vice and describe it as virtue, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But it's not really vice, it's sloppiness.
Okay.
He's just trying to describe as like what makes him good. You'll see what I mean.
And I just didn't get here for a production meeting this morning, so we'll have to move Faith to tomorrow if we don't have that. It was the same story yesterday, and I do my producing now live on air. Well, we have the videos. Okay, can I get a printout on those things? And I'm not bitching at the crew. This is totally transparent television. You wonder why you tune to CNN and it's the same report and the same talking points every show for like a week straight. It's because corporate guys write up the agreement. They check with other corporations. They have a consensus. And then they put it out. And that's what they do over and over again. So that's why it's so boring. It's why it's so stale. You know it's not spontaneous. That's why I can go on Joe Rogan. The first time it's the biggest podcast he ever does. The second time it's the biggest podcast he ever does, breaking that previous record, because people are hungry for reality.
They love reality.
So the thing is, those other places do diligence.
Journalism.
They vet things and they see if something is true.
They run sensational claims by lawyers before yelling about them.
And I just say that all gay people should be lit on fire.
I just shoot from the hip and it's exciting. Yeah, sure,
yes.
Alex.
And I've been sued multiple times for lies.
Currently being
yeah.
sued multiple times. I don't know. Also, I would say, it's important that Alex says that he, like his Rogan, first appearance was the biggest of all time.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate. And then he's like, and now the second one is even bigger. And that is true compared to his first one, but neither of them are even half of the downloads on, YouTube of Elon Musk's appearance.
I don't care.
I don't either.
I don't care. I don't even want to mention that pettiness, because his pettiness is insane. And it's once again an example of him clearly telegraphing that he used a man who thinks he's his friend.
Totally.
And he is not.
What's interesting, though,
Joe, he is not your friend.
I have to call myself out, though, because I brought this up. He does bring up that the Elon Musk episode did better than his first episode, but now this new episode is better than the Elon Musk episode. It is not. Alex has about 9 million downloads the last time I checked on YouTube of the new episode. Elon Musk is over 20. I know.
So, we know.
I did a little bit of research in preparing this episode, but it pales in comparison to the amount of research Alex has done to prepare this episode.
I've got like 7 or 8 stacks of prepared research I did.
Stacks,
I mean,
on stacks?
I did an hour of research on that stack. I did 30 minutes of research on that stack. I did probably 45 minutes of research on that stack. I did hours of research on this stack previously and then currently.
I don't know what that means. But also, if you have a stack of news, like,
and you only do, that's what I was about to say!
His stacks are like, 200 pages of articles. Maybe 100 pages.
That is a few days of research to make that even meaningful.
I would say in 30 minutes, you're lucky if you read all of the stuff that's in that. Let alone find the claims that are being presented in it, find other sources, find out who are the people cited in this story, all that stuff. Get a grasp of the story. I did 30 minutes on this stack of stories. Go fuck yourself, Alex.
That's not a brag. That's an excuse. That's an excuse you give to your teacher. Like, I ran out of time, so I only had 30 minutes to prepare this stack.
It sounds like a brag to his audience because they've never looked into shit.
Because they've never read. Yeah.
So it sounds like, oh my God, he spent an hour on that stack.
Yeah.
And I did a bunch of research on this stack. And so I'm here. And I'm not complaining. I'm just telling you that's why I don't talk in the hallways. It's why I don't do little dances and social network thing.
I forgot.
Wait, that's why he doesn't talk in the hallways?
That's
why he doesn't talk in the hallways.
I completely forgot that was where he went with it.
What hallways?
Who is he talking to?
Who is he talking to?
His audience or people who think he's an asshole at the job?
Yeah, the people who work with him or who are like, that guy never talks to me in the hallways. I said hi, but he was doing 30 minutes of research on 300 pages.
Why is this on the show? He's clearly talking to someone who has complained to HR, his father. Why doesn't Alex make eye contact with me ever? He's busy doing research for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
He's just trying to make things right on air. This is very weird.
Things and little, the thing that everybody does. Yeah, it's too late for a drink of Chrome. Too late for a drink of Chrome. It's 3.5 minutes. It's 3 minutes, 22 seconds long. So, but I like a drink of Chrome because it's something people said didn't exist.
He's talking to the producers now who are
in his ear. I was going to say, that must
be
what he's
doing. Go to a video.
Yeah.
They're like, you're rambling. This is nonsense. Go to a video. Right. Do adrenochrome.
It's too late for adrenochrome.
Right. That has no context on the show. Unless
I was going to say, unless you're talking to a producer.
It's too late it's only noon. What are you talking about? You could still do some adrenochrome. Are you saying that you do adrenochrome?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Because the only way that it's not out of context is like, I can't do a I can't do a Oh my God. I'm dying.
Yeah.
Adrenochrome.
Your tongue in order.
Oh man. I got to get my house in order. Mm-hmm. Got to do 30 minutes of research on my stack.
On your tongue. So he has he tried to play this on Rogan's show too, but Rogan wouldn't let him because, he had the beginning of the video is a clip from Fear and Loathing. Where they talk about adrenochrome.
Yeah.
And so, this is copyrighted material. We're going to get in trouble if we play this. It's just 30 seconds. Skip past it. That stuff. And they won't let him play it. And he's really proud of this video that talks about adrenochrome and how all these elites are trying to harvest the fear of children in order to drink their blood.
Yeah.
Which again goes back to the blood libel. Look into that if you want to know why that's bullshit. And then take another step further past that. Realize that Hunter S. Thompson wasn't writing real shit. Take another step past that. Go read some trip reports from people who have done adrenochrome.
Yeah.
And start to realize how really ineffective of a buzz it is.
Yeah. A lot of the times, even when Hunter S. Thompson was doing real journalism, he wasn't writing real things that happened.
No, what was that? On Fear and Loathing in the Campaign Trail 72?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole thing where he was talking about Gary Hart being an Ibogaine addict.
Just made it up. Straight up bullshit.
He's talking about, like, sources have said that he's an Ibogaine addict. Who's the source?
It was me.
I just said it.
I made it up.
Yeah. He was a chaos kind of guy.
He was a chaos kind of guy.
Yeah. He was creating a bullshit.
Yeah.
And so, like, the idea that adrenochrome was something that he was aware existed and weaved into the mythology of the hyper, surrealistic version of Fear and Loathing.
Right.
Makes complete sense.
Of course.
So anyway, it's all bullshit, but Alex doesn't have time for that video, but they do play it later and we're not going to listen to it because it's dog shit.
No, are you sure it's not great though?
It's not. But in the.
Do you want to just watch Fear and Loathing?
Let's not.
Okay.
I've seen it a few times and that's plenty. Haven't seen it in 20 years. Not 20 years. Been a long time.
It has been a long time for me too.
And I don't miss it.
No, I'm fine without it.
Yeah. So
I do like a good Benicio del Toro.
Me too.
I do like a good Benicio del Toro.
Fine. Let's go to what would you go to? Usual Suspects then?
No. He doesn't really get a chance to shine. He doesn't make any sense in any part
of that
movie.
That's good Benicio.
That is good Benicio.
That's Snatch. Isn't he in Snatch?
No, he's not in Snatch. Why would he be in Snatch?
Everyone's in Snatch.
Everybody is in Snatch. That's true.
Why do I think he's in Snatch?
I don't know.
There's a poster that looks like the poster for Snatch that has Benicio del Toro on
it.
I'm not sure what it
is. Just for anything?
There's some part of my memory that's like that time that I worked at the movie theater, it's something that he was in. The poster is very fucking close.
God, now we're going to find out. Now I'm going to find out that Benicio. Wait, was he? Was he one of the original heist guys who was wearing the. The Hasidic Jew outfits? He in Snatch? Now I'm infuriated.
I'm going to have to look this up.
Yeah, this needs to be looked up. If he's in Snatch, it's gonna be the worst moment of my life.
I'm gonna fucking dance on your face.
So much dancing on my face. I bet he's in Snatch. Fine.
He was in Traffic. We know that. Snatch! Fuck
no
you.
Way! He's
fuck
in
you!
Snatch. God damn
fuck
it.
You!
He is. That's why I remembered. He's
Frankie Fourfingers.
He's. Oh my God! He is in Snatch.
How
fuck.
Dare you make me
fuck.
Doubt myself?
Fuck! God damn it! Cut that all out.
Not a chance. Hey, you know what? Snatch was his next movie after Fear and Loathing. You son of a bitch! How dare you?
I could have swore that he wasn't in Snatch.
Sincerely.
God damn it.
Che.
Yeah, he was. He was in Che.
Wolfman.
That was not a great one.
No.
I could have swore he wasn't in Snatch, and then I immediately remembered after I said it that he was. I'm so sorry. Mm.
That was gaslighting. That is gaslighting in action. You made me think that there was another poster that I was thinking of. Cruel. So, in this next clip.
I was going to say, are we still doing the show?
No. We're going to watch Snatch. About two clips back, we heard Alex bring up the name Faith, and obviously you know that means that Faith Goldie is somehow in the mix.
Yeah.
She comes on the show.
Which is a horrible sign of things to come. If Faith Goldie's in the mix, we're all in trouble.
Yeah, no one's doing great.
Yeah.
She went to CPAC and harassed people, and that's kind of, Alex is thrilled about that.
Of course.
So she comes on the show, and we're not going to listen to too much of her, but I will say that if you go back and you listen to her, it's one of those things that I thought about pulling like almost too many clips of her appearance because she's speaking in a lot of code.
Yeah.
That like it's real.
Yeah.
Real clear that there's anti-Semitic intent behind a lot of the things you're saying.
Right.
But it would end up us being like, let's listen to 20 minutes of her interview. I didn't think it was worth it. I feel like we can take that as read, that she has sort of neo-Nazi leanings. We've talked about that a ton before. I think it's more interesting that this is how Alex decides to start their conversation, a little bit inappropriately.
I wanted to get you on because you're doing what's really, really important, Faith. You are going after the
Jews.
And we've got a video we'll play in the next segment. The sickening Republican establishment, or really just Democrats, and the type of sabotage they're involved in and why this is happening. You got so many big interviews on your Twitter right now with Michelle Malkin and you, which don't clash, two beautiful women together, two smart women.
No!
I'm married. Please stop right now. But tell us what's coming up and what you saw at CPAC.
So he's like, oh, I'm married. I get that off the screen. I'm getting excited. That sort of thing. That's fucking gross. That's inappropriate. That's behavior unbecoming of someone who tries to pretend he's as serious as he is.
And
to be fair, in the, that episode we talked about with Katie Hopkins, where he gets real gross with her, she's very clearly trying to deflect that stuff.
Yeah.
Faith just moves forward.
Yeah.
She doesn't even seem to indicate that she heard him or cares.
Right.
So I'm not going to make a big deal out of this other than to say Alex's behavior inappropriate as fuck.
It's one of those things again where on the right wing, they're like, no, we're totally good towards women. Whoa. Why is the Democratic Party trying to say that they're the party of women? See, we've got these Republican women over here and they're fucking gorgeous.
They're so,
they're beautiful. I love
it. It turned
women
into Don DeMello.
Don DeMello.
It's crazy. And
maybe
then also,
you get a little something for daddy.
What Alex is talking about there at the beginning is, again, the idea of how you shift Overton windows. Like, the idea that, like, it's so important what you're doing, and that's going against the Republicans that aren't hard enough.
Yeah.
They aren't as, super crazy as we want them to be.
Right.
They aren't hyper-nationalists. We need the people who were sort of milquetoast on the fence to be forced into taking a position that they don't want to take.
Right.
In order to save their bases.
Right.
And Faith, you are doing that, and you're hot, and people like it that you're doing it.
Just like Jan Morgan.
Very exciting for him. So, in this next clip, Alex talks about her time at CPAC. And, actually, I'm not sure that she comes in on this clip too much, because Alex just starts complaining about, this is wild. He's trying to express in the same breath that he doesn't have a problem with people being gay, but also that there's too many gay people in the GOP. Which is hard.
That's a fine line to walk, especially since that line doesn't exist and you're just a homophobe.
And we know that Alex Jones isn't good at, like, as a sort of a tightrope walker.
No. He's not a good tightrope.
But here is him trying.
And some of our reporters as well, Jake Lloyd, others, they go to CPAC. And we're not here like, oh, we want to be at CPAC, or, oh, we want to be you. It's this once a year event. All these candy ass Republicans are really Democrats. You know, I mean, most of these guys, not against gay guys, but they're dating Democrat men.
Huh?
And so they're all like, well, I'll tell how you bite your pillow, you know, if you don't help us do this. So there's a huge homosexuality issue, in the Republican Party.
What?
And again, I'm a libertarian. I'm not judging people, but that's what this
sounds like.
I don't understand what he's trying to present, because if you just take him at his words,
too many gays in the Republican Party.
Right, and they're dating Democrat men who are they're having sex, right? And
right.
The Democratic dudes are blackmailing them with the idea that they're in a relationship.
Is that how that works?
That's what he's expressing. He's saying that I'll tell everyone how you bite the pillow so you guys come and be on our side on policy issues.
I thought it was
That's crazy.
I thought it was that democracy was a sexually transmitted disease.
What he's trying to express is homosexual blackmail being done by intimate partners.
Right.
Within, cause he's not saying that they just hook up. He's saying
they're in a committed relationship.
Well, maybe not committed.
Well, that's fair.
Could
that's
be
fair.
Ethically non-monogamous.
Hey, you know what?
Any of these things are
possible. Let's not put labels on it.
Right. Facebook, it's complicated. That sort of thing. But it's not just.
It's blackmail.
Right.
Is that a Facebook status for a relationship?
Only in DC. It's crazy. What he's trying to express is nuts on its face. And then it's even more nuts that he's trying to say that, like, if you say you don't have a problem with, like, people being LGBT, but then you also say we have a gay problem in the GOP.
I really think
those two things cannot exist in the same space.
You can't even have that in the same sentence.
I actually do have a way that you can have that conversation.
Okay.
But it's not the way Alex wants it.
No. How can we have that conversation?
Well, if we accept that there are a lot of gay people closeted in the GOP.
Which I'm sure there are.
And them maintaining their cover of not being homosexual or having being a part of the LGBT community, they have to make compromises in some way. The issue isn't that they are LGBT, it's that they wouldn't be accepted were they to live publicly in the political sphere right. that they're in. So the issue isn't there's a gay problem.
It's there's a homophobia problem. Yeah, gay exactly. Yeah.
And I apologize that it keeps saying gay because it is much bigger than that.
No, it's way bigger.
All sorts of gay, lesbian, all across the board.
Yeah.
All of it. And so if Alex is talking about that, then his position on this would be totally different. It would be, we need to all be more accepting of people of different identities
yeah.
and sexual proclivities, as opposed to being like, too many of these fucking GOP people are secretly fucking same-sex Democrats and getting blackmailed.
Yeah.
Fucking weird.
That is such a weird thing to be like, okay, so our problem isn't that there are gay GOP people. Our problem is that gay people in the GOP can be blackmailed by partners because if they were out, we would not accept them in the GOP.
Right. It does seem like the blackmail is contingent on yeah, the GOP response.
Yeah, exactly. It yep. seems like you're elucidating a larger problem that is, oh boy.
But he doesn't.
You should let that one go.
Yeah, and thankfully he's talking to Faith Goldie, so she doesn't want
to. So she's not going to just jump in and be like,
yeah, too many gays.
Excuse me, logically, you're the bad guy here?
So, like I said, I listened to the entire interview, and I don't think there's much value in it. And there are tons and tons of, like, veiled references to anti-Semitism. Like,
yeah.
she's talking about, like, the problem is these worldwide folks, and you can call them the globalists, you can call them the neocons, and just prattles off, like, characterizations of
yeah.
things that, well, may exist in some ways, are also code words and boogeymen that anti-Semites use in order to characterize the one world government.
Right.
The protocols type narratives. And so I kept this last one because it's how the interview ends. And I think Faith, like, I think I think this makes it clear the sort of thing that she's saying.
We all have to do our part, because if they just see a couple of leaders, they try to take us out. But if our numbers keep on growing and we go to a grassroots, a truly grassroots revolution, which means to return to the old order, there's absolutely nothing that these demons and lizard people can do to shut us up.
That's right. And the old order is the new order of Renaissance and humanity and everything that we've seen in the human ethos in the last 2,500 years.
These demon and lizard people. Now, you really consider what you've got there. You've got the demon, which is something that Alex, that's a very big part of his anti-Semitic tropes that he uses and is classically related. You got lizard people. That's fucking David Icke's characterization
oh, hell yeah.
of the protocols, the characters who he pretends right. are real in the protocols.
Right.
So what she's saying is that it's using, because she doesn't fucking believe there's lizard people.
No.
She's using that as code to be like, we all know what we're talking about. The yeah. demons and the lizard people.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, the only way the criticism of Ilhan Omar would be something that I would even be willing to entertain is if she tried to code it and be like, see, it's the lizards at AIPAC who are running everything. And then I'd be like, ha-ha, now we know what's going on there.
Right.
That's
or if she didn't engage with criticism, like if she bucked back and was defensive about
yeah.
the criticism, as opposed to trying to learn from good faith
yeah.
Criticisms that come
right.
to her,
then right.
it would be a very different conversation that we could be having. So, Jordan, in this next clip, I mentioned this earlier, Roger Stone has got that old gag order. He has been talking some shit on Instagram.
How is he not in jail?
Well, yeah, well, we're recording this on Wednesday, and he does have a hearing on Monday of next week. I would say I think there's maybe a 73% chance he goes to prison next
week. I'm going to be so mad if he doesn't go to prison.
I'm not going to be mad. I'll be surprised. It'll be like, well, those Duke boys done got out of a pickle once again.
It will be yeah, like that, except for those Duke boys didn't fucking lobby for a goddamn dictator who's killing his citizens.
Well, it's like the Patton Oswalt bit about Bush. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, no. I know. How are they going to jump the General Lee over the Constitution and oh my God? Yeah.
So I told you already that Roger can't be on the War Room anymore. And
right.
Alex is kind of pissed off about that. And he talks about it in this next clip.
And then there's the War Room with Owen Schroyer. We can't have Roger Stone on. He's totally gagged and can't even talk to me. He sent me a text message saying he loves me. And that's basically the end of it this morning. Bye-bye.
Then he explained fisting to me.
Into the lair of the goblins. He said that, too. He said, I've now been taken over by goblins. What a sad end.
So I have...
That is not a sad end.
I have made the point, I believe I've had private conversations with people on through our group, and I think I've mentioned this to you too, that Alex is probably the primary beneficiary of Roger getting a gag order.
Yeah.
Because now he gets to control Roger's narrative.
Yeah.
Like, entirely.
Absolutely.
Like, the idea, okay, now he can't be on the show anymore. He just texted me, said, I love you, man. I love you. I can't be on anymore. And he's going in to fight the goblins or whatever. He can now shape this exactly how he wants. This is a win.
Right.
He doesn't have to deal with Roger trying to beg for donations on his show, which was a huge sticking point he was complaining about like a week or two ago. And now he's like, yeah, I'm the only one who can tell my audience what Roger is saying.
No. And
how great is that?
Roger has become his Mark Richards.
Yep.
Roger has become the person that he can go to and say, oh, they didn't allow me to have a pencil in there, so I'm just going to tell you what he said.
As we all know, the pencil is a snake that can talk.
What is a pencil but a snake that can talk?
We all know that. Yeah, it is totally the same thing. He has now control of Roger's narrative moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's lamenting the idea that he can't be on the War Room anymore. But even in that clip, I guarantee that Roger didn't fucking text him, I love you,
good
I'm going
God,
in to
no.
fight the goblins.
Roger's never texted his wife that he loved
Roger
her.
Texted Alex, prepare to die, cocksucker. Like
exactly.
He's an asshole. There's no way.
They're going to murder me, and it's because you betrayed me.
Right.
Roger texted me that he loved me the other day.
Alex, you're not fighting hard enough for me. I'm going to get Travis Irvine to come up there and kick your ass.
Alex, you're a fucking coward, and I hope you go down with me. And if I had enough information, I'd take you with me. Roger texted me that he loved me the other day.
Alex, you son of a bitch. Why won't you get on air and tell everyone that Randy Credico hijacked my Instagram? Like, I've been trying to get out, but I've been gagged. Get on it. Get on it. It seems like Roger says he loves me. What the fuck?
That must be a real weird relationship.
Ugh. But now Alex has complete control over it on a public-facing front, and that is awesome.
That's a good power to have.
Yeah. So now we get to the point of the show where Paul Joseph Watson shows up.
Poor bastard.
On the 5th.
Oh,
he's
no,
in
I
the
don't
studio.
Give a shit.
Nah, fuck it.
I hope he gets hit by a truck.
They spend a whole lot of time talking about how censored they are and how victimized they are. It's very boring. We won't listen to a ton of that.
Okay.
It's real, real weak. But this next clip illustrates so perfectly their relationship.
That's the new breakaway civilization, where if you're a good globalist, you get technocracy connections.
Completely.
By the way, I can't give you the details, Paul, but look at me right now. I already knew this, so I basically bluff people into admitting it. People have access to everything we do.
Yeah.
Not just people that work for Google or YouTube or Facebook. It's been given. This is the army. They've given the SJWs, all of them, NSA-level connections to everything we do.
So Alex is trying to present the idea that, like, if you're a good globalist and you play along with the system and stuff like that,
you get
inside stuff, Ahmad Rashad-style business about Alex's, like, his whole website. You get all of it. You get NSA-level stuff in there. Mm. The only reason that I think that clip is interesting, because what they're talking about is that moment where Alex is like, I can't talk about any of this, but Paul, look at me. I'm telling you something for real. Like, that's how I've seen that moment play out between them way more than once.
Paul,
that idea of
Paul,
like,
look at me. We're not lying this time.
Paul, you are too, default conversational, and you will sometimes say things that punch holes in the stories that I'm trying to tell. Look at me. I can't prove this. But here's what I'm about to say. Just say yes after this. It's happened a number of times between the two of them, and I love it. I love that dynamic because it's first of all abusive, but also Paul Joseph Watson's been there for fucking ever, so he knows what he's doing.
He should.
Yeah,
and
he makes so much money. Like, if you consider the salaries that we found for, like, Corsi, how much is Paul making?
Yeah.
It has to be more than fucking Corsi.
Yeah, it's at the very least.
It's sick money.
It's at the very least enough to afford a flight to Austin.
It's sick money for what
and,
he does.
And from our experience, a flight to Austin? Pretty expensive, even from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Let alone from, jolly England.
Yes.
So, the two of them, they, like, you can tell even there, He's talking about like media censorship and how conservatives are under attack and all that bullshit.
Blah, 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 blah.
That takes up a large, large part of their interview.
We're victims! We're victims!
I find profoundly boring and I don't want to talk about, because I don't care. I find the arguments unconvincing. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it relies on anecdotal stories that you're telling about X person on Twitter or whatever. And I just don't care to track down a million different threads to help you prove your point if you refuse to be specific.
Right.
I just can't. It's not interesting to me. And even if everything they're saying is true, I'm still not convinced that I care. That sort of
thing. Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
I'm going to leave that all aside because Alex says some really fucked up things while Paul Joseph Watson is in studio, and Paul is totally fine with it. The first one isn't all that fucked up, but it is ludicrous.
And again, I'm not a porn guy, folks. I'm sorry.
Bullshit.
Back when I was about 15 years old.
Bullshit.
Man, and I watched Debbie Dead Dallas and or New Wave Hookers. I thought it was the best thing I ever saw. But
New Wave Hookers.
I bit into the real thing, and then you have a wife and you have children. It's about life. It's about love. But see,
he's not a porn guy. Although he was caught with porn open on
his phone.
I know.
I was gonna say, go fuck yourself.
Months ago.
Go fuck yourself.
Like I understand that, but that kind of matches with Alex's like psychology. It is a very Arrested Development kind of thing. Where, like, when you were younger, you would pretend, I don't look at porn.
Oh, I don't know. Whoa, who's saying I masturbate? I don't masturbate.
Right.
No, that's not something
that's
I do.
Weird.
It's all about having sex for me. I want the real thing. I don't masturbate. That's weak. Fuck off.
Yeah, so Alex still embodies some of that, not realizing that, like, it was a kind of, like, memed story about the idea that he had porn on his phone that he accidentally revealed on air. And all that stuff. And then also, it's Debbie Does Dallas, not Debbie Did Dallas.
Don't worry
about
it.
It's not the past time. So in this next clip, we get back to the AOC narrative.
And, right. She's evil.
Paul Joseph Watson.
With all of her thoughts about people having health care.
Paul Joseph Watson is hanging and banging. And we get to Alex comparing what happened or what he thinks is going on with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and his main man, Dinesh D'Souza.
Oh, God.
And that's really fun for me. And I'll explain why on the other end of this clip.
But see how my brain works, Paul, is Dinesh D'Souza had the number two documentary and the number three documentary in history, only Michael Moore above him. And they were really upset about him going in the 2016 election. And so they found out that he got a bunch of friends to give $23,000 that they said wasn't listed properly on federal forms.
It wasn't.
So he went to jail for 9 months. And I've got the articles right here we can show TV viewers. D'Souza pleads guilty in New York campaign finance case. Now, we have AOC, Alexandria Cortez, with $18 million in a secret pack
she Where'd
was running
she get that?
2 years ago when she claimed she was this bartender, and millions of dollars, not just a million, several million to her that she never declared under taxes or anywhere else.
He's trying to conflate the idea of these, like, Justice Democrats and the other PAC that have nothing to do necessarily with her, but worked on her campaign
in the
alignment that we were talking about earlier. So there's a few problems about what Alex is saying here about Dinesh D'Souza and Cortez and their similarities. The first thing is that they did completely different things. That's the first problem. What Dinesh D'Souza did is explicitly a felony. What AOC did was completely legal and wasn't something she did. It was the brand new Congress and Justice Democrats.
Yeah.
So it's not even her. Also, Alex is trying to say that they were worried about Dinesh D'Souza in the 2016 election. So they did this. They put him in prison.
Really?
That's absurd since he was charged on May of 2014. Also, this
in the 2016 election
before any of the primaries really got
exactly.
going.
Exactly.
Anyway,
they knew he was coming. They knew he was coming, Dan.
They had psychic powers,
which
Alex knows
exists.
Down
the pipeline. Oh, yeah.
Also, this bears mentioning, Dinesh D'Souza pled guilty because he knew that he would play the victim card in the court of public opinion, but he could only play the role of the guy who committed a felony in a real court.
Right.
So he pled guilty in order to be like, well, all right, let's minimize whatever sentence I get. These are completely different scenarios, but Alex is right. This is a demonstration of how his brain works, which is to say that it works poorly.
Poorly.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, this is how my brain works. I'm connecting things that are not related at all.
It is the
conundrum that the Republican, the not Republicans, the dumb fuck right, faces with Trump. Trump has committed campaign violations. Trump has broken the emoluments clause. Trump has committed all kinds of crimes that are well documented and very obvious. So for each one, they have to try and create a what about for.
Right.
So like this. Oh, okay. Actually, oh, so payments to Stormy Daniels. That's a campaign finance crime. What about AOC? You don't have any argument to that.
You're more right than you even know. Because
I thought I knew I was right.
You might be even more right, though.
I didn't know if I could be more
because
right.
Because this LLC that was registered by Checkerbirdie, it was registered in Delaware, which is a pretty regular thing that businesses do because Delaware has
insanely low taxes. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not even tax necessarily. It has like sort of anti-transparency rules about LLCs that are set up there.
There's I did not know that. I know it was a huge financial crime state.
They're very welcoming to people who want to establish a business there.
They're borderline the Swiss.
In some ways.
Yeah.
And so that whataboutism would be even better served if Alex knew what he was talking about, because then he could spin the argument that, like, hey, you know, Michael Cohen established an LLC in Delaware specifically in order to make those payments to Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, exactly.
He could use that.
That would work, except 100%. He would then have to even more make Cohen culpable.
Well,
you know,
but he's totally like fine
you
with that.
Avoid
he's already
that.
He's already established a narrative where it's all Cohen and Trump is totally
right,
cool.
Right, fair.
So, like, he could do that. He's just bad at this.
They're all just bad at. Like, I read so many things where it's like, oh, did you guys know that AOC's campaign advisor was a millionaire? She professes to, and you're like, guys.
If Alex went
you're pathetic.
If Alex actually went to production meetings and I was in them, he'd be doing a much better job. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
So
we got to stop giving advice to him.
This next clip I only included because Alex does a Bernie Sanders impression and because I'm petty. So let's get through it.
Talk about the hypocrisy, because commies and socialists never own a factory. They never build. They never write a book. They just steal money, Paul. Like Bernie Sanders. White people don't know what it's like to be poor. I drive $100,000 vehicles.
So he's doing that impression. Point of order, Bernie Sanders has written at least 3 books.
I was going to say, yeah. Also, that's more Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
But it's pretty close to his Bernie. Paul Joseph Watson finally chimes in here. We haven't heard a bunch of him, but he's there. He's looming in the wings.
Because I don't want to ever hear his voice?
Well, it's interesting to hear him not over Skype, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah?
Listening to this episode, like, whoa, his voice sounds like it's not over the phone. but in this next clip, he thinks he has a gotcha moment about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
God, they're so afraid of her.
It's not good if you just listen to it. Because on its face, this is a bad refutation.
But there's another breaking scandal about AOC, which is a complete fake news story. She's tweeted that Jerry Falwell said he basically wanted to kill all Muslims at CPAC and that this is President Trump's fault, Orange Man Bad. This comment from Falwell did not happen at CPAC. You can see in the video this is not a CPAC. But
okay.
Wait, his argument is that Falwell said it, but he didn't say it at CPAC.
Well... All right, Paul.
That is not a good defense.
Paul.
That is not a good defense.
Paul. You are missing the forest for the trees. And also...
They said that Trump said the N-word over and over at CPAC, but that's not true. He said it at my place a couple of weeks ago.
Right. That's the same level of, like, denial. Like, it wasn't at CPAC. Fake news! Like, okay. I understand. And also, she didn't say, and no one did say, that Jerry Falwell Jr. was saying that it was good to shoot all Muslims.
Right.
He was saying that if more people had concealed carry, you could stop those Muslims before they did blank. And then he fumbled over his words.
Yeah.
Because there was even a recognition in the moment by him as he was speaking. They're like, ah, fuck.
Oh, no.
That was a Freudian slip.
Muslims are bad. Ah!
That was a Freudian slip on his part in some ways. Because what he was trying to say, obviously, was terrorist whatever.
Right.
But the reason that it came out of his mouth is because those words exist in the same part of his brain.
Those are what he believes, and so he just forgot to code it.
The criticisms that are being made about him are he's saying, if more people had concealed carry guns, they could kill Muslims before they do shit.
Exactly.
And that is a part of, like, what his autopilot
brought
him
to
say.
We need to censure Omar. We need to censure. We got to make sure that we put a good censure out her in Congress because we can't have any anti-Semitic kill all Muslims. Mm-hmm. Thanks, dudes.
But
good work, guys.
It wasn't kill all Muslims. That's the straw man that Paul Joseph Watson's creating.
No, of course.
Because that's easier for him to attack because it's not what anybody is saying that he said.
Of course.
But what he did say was fucked up.
Yeah.
So.
Of course.
And, I mean, AOC did take it. But look, she's got some egg on her face because it wasn't at CPAC.
I don't care. I don't care.
Mark Dice probably made a video about that laughing at how she said it was at CPAC.
Great. Oh, my God. These people are so fucking stupid. How do we lose? It's because they don't care. It's because they don't fucking care how stupid they are.
Nah, I think it's about money and societal momentum.
That's a good point.
So in this next clip, dude, here we go.
Yeah.
This is where everything turns because Alex rarely has Paul Joseph Watson in studio. Mm. He's got his boy. They've been working together for a decade plus.
Mm.
Like they are buddies. He calls him all the time. And is like, Paul, I need you to get this article up because I can't write. Just give
right.
me this article
or read.
Right. Anything.
Yeah. You
know, they have had a codependent relationship forever.
Yeah.
And so he's got his guy in studio and they spend, like I said, a lot of time talking about like, we're victims, the media censoring us, blah, blah, blah. But I think they completely wasted the rest of the time that they have by doing a half an hour on an issue no one cares about, they're wrong about, and they just look like fucking idiots about. Jordan, this is going to be gross.
But in terms of who's going to run for the Democrats, Michelle Obama's not going to run because she needs a physical test, and we know why she's not going to go through with that.
No!
But Joe Biden, if you look at all the polls...
Let's be serious. She has the neck and face of a man. She has huge shoulders. It looks like she's got a summer sausage in her pants. And we're not against trannies, but it does appear, just like Obama was raised by a transsexual and is obsessed with it, that Michelle Obama is Michael, which she's called in multiple speeches Michael.
I mean... I know several people who are very credible people, you know, involved in politics, and they believe exactly the same thing as you, Alex. So this, she's got, but we worked out yesterday, she has an InfoWars protein bar down there, so it's all been explained. She's not nuts, but it's not the nuts that you're thinking about.
Well, but, you know, we make jokes about this. I mean, she's a big old man. and seriously, I'm a libertarian. I don't hate somebody. But, I mean, the fact that she's got, you know, Alabama black snake down in those pants, it's not a bad thing. It's just that what weird psyop of the elites are they so obsessed with a first lady that's a man, the kids are adopted, and I mean, that's true. That, I mean, that's fake.
That's crazy. I mean, because that's a conversation they're having. And that's only the beginning. They talk about this for maybe 15, 20 minutes, about Michelle Obama being a man. It's real fucked up. You're chewing something over right there. You have a thought. It's not a good thought. You're very angry. I'm just going to sit here and vamp until you figure out how to put this into words.
Words is a very generous way of putting what I'm thinking right now.
Well, it's because we've covered this a bunch of times.
I would go with Primal Scream.
Well, Alex always plays this game
where
he's like,
we
were just joking around about Michelle Obama being a man. But then he's like, but I'm actually very serious about this. She is a man.
I just.
This is pathetic.
I just can't accept that because this is not something that's outside of regular thought. This is not something that's outside of, not for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, for this subsection of humanity, which
right.
we'll call, I don't know, Molochs.
Bad thinkers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is fucked up.
When I hear stuff like this, I just think like you have gotten so into the trolley meme lord sort of world of the internet and like the parts of Reddit where Trump is super popular and that sort of thing, that you have lost control of what you're even saying. Because in the past, we've heard over and over again him waffle between like legit accusations that they're lying about, Michelle Obama being, a female.
Yeah.
And then being like, we were just joking around when people press him about it. I don't like that he's now sort of reinvigorating this in 2019, but I also recognize that he's probably trying to troll people into covering him. Like, that's the sort of defensive game that we have to play all the time now. Because when he talks about these sneak attacks, like going on Rogan, the sneak attacks are also him talking about stuff like this.
Yeah.
Because he's hoping people will cover him to give him more attention. He needs that. He, on his own, left to his own devices, he's a man in the wilderness who is going to run out of supplies pretty fucking quick at this point. But if he keeps playing games like this, keeps trying to do things to essentially troll people into keeping his name in the headlines, he gets a little bit of, he gets some supply drops. He gets some water. He gets some really fucked up people who believe whatever dumb shit he's trolling the media with to donate to him or whatever. You know, like, that's the game he's playing. And that's a possibility. Other possibility is he just doesn't give a shit and he's having fun with his buddy. And either way, it's not good.
I find it to be so abhorrent and so pointless, and they think it's funny, and it's not funny. Like, just as a comedian, I am infuriated with you.
Because
it's not, there's nothing even approximating a joke there.
There's two levels.
And it's utterly racist, because it's utterly racist.
It is.
It is 100% racist. It's, oh, Serena is so good because she's actually a man.
Those sorts of things.
Go fuck yourself.
Those things were never applied to, like, Sharapova.
No, absolutely not.
I guess she wasn't that great.
She was great.
No,
she
Kournikova was the one who wasn't good.
Kournikova, she was all right.
She was fine.
Yeah.
She was a better media figure than a tennis player. But my point is that, like, those sorts of accusations are only levied against strong women of color. Like,
absolutely.
Those sorts of things are only used to diminish their stature as people. And it's so hard to unpack because it is an attack, but even calling it an attack is unfair because right-thinking people don't think that were she to be trans, it would be a horrible negative thing. But in that world, it is. So it's racist. It's just entirely bigoted. It's fucked up. I don't think either of us are triggered or anything like that. It's just disappointing. And the problem, what you were bringing up is...
It's not... disappointing is a massive understatement. Massive understatement.
And what you were bringing up is also a problem because, or not what you're bringing up is a problem, but the sort of conversation about it is because there is a part of it that they're trying to be funny, and it's not funny. There's no joke here, really. But the other thing is that, like, Alex keeps bringing it back, like, I'm not joking. This is true. This is true. You know, like, or whatever, or I believe this. And, if the joke is that he keeps saying he believes it, and then there's no joke, I mean, it's an even worse joke.
How many different ways
are the globalists a joke?
How many different ways can you describe this as, like, first off, anything, and, well, actually, you know what? That invalidates literally anything you have to say about anything. If you ever talk about anything that the president says or does, or any criticism that the president gets, or any criticism that Melania gets, or any criticism at all, you have invalidated and you are worthless. Like, my reaction to this is so much similar to so many conversations we've had where it's like, let's engage with the right and how they think. There's nothing to engage with. He's gone. He is not to be involved, period.
So, Jordan, you have a lot of thoughts about this, and I agree with you. I have a lot
furious
of thoughts.
Furious rage-filled thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts as well, but it's interesting to me how Alex is super preoccupied, not about this being like some sort of a nefarious thing. He's just preoccupied with the idea that Michelle Obama has a dick.
By the way, I legitimately am allowed to think this. Whether I'm right or wrong, I mean, it's America. I mean, Michelle Obama looks
like
a college linebacker And then we haven't shown the video. Can you show her coming out of, like, when they drop their daughters off at school? And she comes out, and it's like, I mean, everybody's seeing, it's like, you know, it's banging around. It's bouncing around. She's, like, having problems getting that water hose in line. I mean, can we maybe find that and show that?
He's real interested on that level, which is weird. And
I'm
also
not doing well, Dan.
No, I understand. And I would say that this is a gross show. This episode of Alex on the 5th. He starts by all this weird talk about porn and how they're teaching kids to fist in school and what have you. And then towards the end of it, him and Paul Joseph Watson are having a bull session for like 20 minutes about this big swinging water hose. Like, it's gross. Like, from just a level of, like, doing a radio show, I would say this is gross.
This is disgusting.
If I heard this sort of thing on any other radio show, I'd be like, these people have kind of lost the thread a little bit. But there's one more clip.
You know what's crazy? I was watching a video of Trump's press conference at whenever he talked at CPAC. Nothing between his legs. I think he is actually a Ken doll. I don't think he has a penis. I think it was removed by his cuck Nazi father, and I hope everybody knows that Trump does not have a dick.
Or it's possibly as a micropenis, or as Chicago comedian Adam Burke has explained to me, it's pronounced macropenis. So in this next clip, we have one more from the 5th, and that... This, to me, is such a perfect distillation of how Alex deals with criticism. He has people who are criticizing him, and he thinks that they're fucking with him, and then he responds accordingly.
My problem is the more they mess with me, the more I work and fight. They think it's like making me weak. It's the opposite. It's pushing me towards a heart attack where I work 20 hours a day. They think it's like making me back down. It's the opposite.
Do they just expect you to give up? Like, you're not going anywhere. Like, I literally don't know how to do anything else. I wouldn't want to. So we're not going to go anywhere. Nothing's going to happen.
But imagine, they think we're like them, Paul. They think, like you attack me and I go away?
Yeah.
No, I dream about strangling you.
That's not good.
Oh, that's not good.
Nope. So, but that's how he deals with the criticism. Like, these abstract ideas or even concrete ideas about, like, your reporting's bad. You fucked up on this. You are putting people in danger. You have caused harassment to tons of people who don't deserve that sort of attention, like because of your actions, because of the lack of, well, I mean, earlier you said you missed this production meeting and just do like your editorial shit on air. Because of that sort of sloppiness, that laziness, you have caused a mass amount of pain in people's lives. Well, look, they're fucking with me. That's fucking with me. And when people fuck with me, I want to strangle them. I dream of strangling them. That's an insane way to deal with things. We are done with the 5th. And now, the 6th starts. Wednesday, if you're nasty. It starts, and Alex has a big announcement.
Just a few minutes ago, before we went live, I got an emergency phone call from Tommy Robinson. He's had leftist Antifa groups that obviously work for MI5, that's come out in internal videos and documents, encamped around his home, threatening his family. The police are staked out down the street with surveillance equipment, listening to everything happening in his house, desperately trying to set him up and send him back to prison for exposing the giant child kidnapping rings that have now been brought down to a great extent nationwide. Tens of thousands of children freed in the last 2 years, thanks to Tommy Robinson, a living hero.
I thought yesterday on the show you were saying that the Muslims are the only ones who are great in the UK, and now,
yep,
Tommy Robinson, the guy who's made his entire career off demonizing Muslims, as a living hero.
He's like Moses.
I'm not sure really how to work this out.
He's like Moses.
So, Jordan, I want to tell you about what this is about. On the evening of March 4th, Tommy Robinson showed up at the house of a British journalist by the name of Mike Stuckberry. I saw this unfolding on Twitter as Stuckberry tweeted about how scary the experience was for him, and his account of the story is backed up by police reports, at least one article in The Guardian, and Tommy Robinson's own live streams that he put out. Mike had been doing some reporting on Tommy Robinson's habit of showing up at his critics' homes and live streaming it in a clear attempt to intimidate them into silence, in addition to doxing them without ever really posting the critics' address, because he's live streaming showing up at their house. Mike had been trying to get the ball rolling on a class action lawsuit against Robinson for clear instances of him committing defamation. So naturally, Tommy showed up at Mike's house around 10:15 p.m., banging on the door and insisting that he wanted just to talk. Just wanted to talk. Mike claimed that there was banging on multiple doors and windows, which he took as a sign that it wasn't just Tommy there. As this was happening, he began getting tons of messages on social media from accounts, very different accounts, saying things about how he'd wronged Tommy. All stuff Mike has posted screenshots of. Mike called the police, who arrived and talked to Tommy and told him to leave, which he did, only to return and bang on Mike's door again around 5 a.m. Mike called the police again and filed another report. Tommy Robinson is doing damage control on this because it's an absolutely clear case of what he did, which was illegal. And Mike isn't afraid of him and gave the police audio and video of Tommy's harassment. To be fair, he probably wouldn't have to give the police anything since Tommy's live stream had all the evidence necessary, including Tommy Robinson giving out Mike's full address and threatening to expose him and calling him a pedophile. In order to save face, as all these monstrous assholes do, Tommy is now playing the victim card. His stance on it is the only way. He went over to this guy's house to broadcast his address and threaten him because it was in response to him receiving a legal letter at his house informing him that there was a libel action against him that was proceeding, which he thinks is exposing his family to people knowing where he lives and putting him in danger. He didn't allege that Mike had anything to do with the letter being delivered, so I don't know why he thinks him showing up at this guy's house twice in a night is an appropriate self-defense. Like that's an absurd response.
Your Honor, I did not stalk that man. I just showed up at his house multiple times in the middle of the night without his consent and screamed at him and knocked on his doors and windows. I don't understand how you could possibly view that as anything other than love.
And I gave out his address to everyone listening in my live streams.
Oh, the people who I know, of course, are never, ever, ever violent or stupid or insane.
What this all boils down to is that Tommy Robinson slandered a 15-year-old Syrian child who was the victim of a bullying assault caught on video at a school in Huddersfield. Because he can't accept any instances where non-white people get to be victims of something, he made videos claiming that the child in those videos had attacked three girls at the school previous to the video's beginning, something that he was in all likelihood just making up, and one of the girls' mother explicitly said was false. Mike Stuckberry was part of a group that was raising funds to pay the legal costs to sue Tommy for his clear instance of slander against a child. And Tommy knew he was fucked. What do monsters do when they're backed into a corner? They attack. Or in this case, show up and harass you twice in one night and sick their fans on you. Since the incident, Mike has received tons of messages on social media from Robinson's fans telling him they're on their way to his house. People on Gab have circulated his address in far-right circles, even in Europe, the European far-right circles. And Mike posted a video of coming home to find a note in his door that says, "We'll be back, Mike." But of course, Alex doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't care that Tommy slandered an innocent 15-year-old child who was the victim of bullying that started all of this. He doesn't care that Tommy absolutely harassed Mike Stuckberry in a criminal and actionable way, and Mike is being terrorized because of it. No. The story that Alex wants to tell is how everyone is oppressing poor Tommy Robinson. Poor Tommy Robinson has to deal with these people who are surrounding his house. I will say the only version of this that I even fucking come close to believing, because Alex plays a video of Tommy confronting people outside his house who he says are MI5 and they have recording equipment in the back of the car or whatever. It's very inconclusive. It's nonsensical. It is not evidence of anything. But if they are police, they are there because what he did to this guy. They are there because he, the other night, went over to this guy's house. The police came, talked him into leaving, and then 5-6 hours later showed back up and banged on his door again and terrorized this guy. When all he had done is respond to the fact that Tommy had slandered a 15-year-old who was the victim of bullying and was like, we're sick of this shit. Let's crowdfund the legal defense required for this person who wants to sue him to be able to do it. It's monstrously pathetic. And Alex is only interested in how Tommy is a victim. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating to me, the wide variety of acceptable punishments that don't actually fit the reality of the crime. Like what fascinates me about this is that Tommy Robinson has done more damage to the world.
Or Steve Yaxley Lennon, as his name may be.
Whichever. Has done more damage to the world than any one murderer. But if you murder somebody, you're going to spend your life in prison.
Oh, his and rhetoric is absolutely led
to... If you're Tommy Robinson...
So many assaults and probable murders.
You are the instigator for so much violence and horror, and yet you're technically protected.
And this is so much of the stuff that I wanted to bring into the conversation by Alex... Well, I mean, Alex allowed me to by talking about the grooming gang stuff earlier in the episode. When we talk about how all of this like Quilliam report that they put out was deeply flawed and didn't take into account things that fit their own diagnostic criteria just because they were white people. They kind of ignored it from it. Tommy Robinson is someone who has made an entire career out of antagonizing about the idea that Muslims are leading these rape and grooming gangs, and he's the only person who's willing to stand up against it.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Quilliam, by doing what they have done, gives Tommy cover for the Islamophobic and bigoted xenophobic actions that he makes.
Yeah.
It exists in this whole continuum. So Alex has gotten this message from Tommy, and that's not good, because Tommy's lying to him, and Alex has no critical instincts, and he's just going to be like, Tommy's fucking awesome. But he can't get Tommy on the phone because he's dealing with legal stuff. And so we get to Alex trying to tell a news story.
Dozens arrested for erecting anti-migrant Christian cross in Greece. The cross is seen as hurtful to Muslims, and so no public crosses. Germany, Sweden, and others have been ordering churches to remove, some cases, 1,000-year-old crosses. I'm not joking. It's an Infowars.com article by Ben Warren with links to mainstream news saying it's a wonderful thing.
Mainstream news.
The story Alex is talking about here, let's say he's getting it a little wrong. Allow me to read to you from this story that was posted on Euronews. Quote, police arrested 35 Greek citizens and an Albanian man on charges of arbitrary occupation of public property and erecting an illegal construction. The site on the cliffs of Apiaia in Biatien, Lesbos's capital city, is on the grounds of the island's famed fortress and protected by archaeological law. They weren't in trouble because it was a cross, and not even in trouble because they were making a gaudy xenophobic monument. They got arrested because of where they built it. The exact same article talks about how a similar cross was erected in 2018, but it wasn't on protected land, so no one got arrested. Alex's article on Infowars is profoundly sloppy. For one, the article mentions that this was a zoning issue, but it still presents it as if it was a migration cultural issue.
They bring up that
they got arrested because it was on archaeological ground, like protected ground.
It was because the ghost of Sappho killed 6 people that day.
Right. I mean, it's like they bring that up in the article, but the entire thrust of the article is like, let's believe that that's bullshit.
Yeah.
That's whitewashing.
Wow.
Nonsense. Second, his article includes this line. Quote, interestingly, the same rocky cliff is where a, quote, intercultural coexistence group tore down another cross last October because it was offensive to migrants passing through. Their source for that story is a hyperlink to another InfoWars story. The only source for that second InfoWars story is an article in the Greek City Times that doesn't say that a, quote, intercultural coexistence group tore down the cross. That is completely made up by Ben Warren, the writer of this InfoWars article. That article in the Greek City Times, as well as the recent one in the Euro News, only reports that a group called, quote, Coexistence and Communication in the Aegean had complained about the cross and requested it be taken down, and that a month later it was destroyed by vandals. There's no indication that the coexistence group had and the Vandals are the same people. That's a complete invention of InfoWars and their editorial team.
That's the level of like
this is
Barbara
sloppy.
Barbara Streisand donates $100,000 coming out of Senator Inhofe's mouth, and then 10 years later being like, and I'm gonna reference that Barbara Streisand donated that it was you the whole time. You're linking to your own fucking article.
Well, they do that all the time. I don't,
that's pathetic.
Well, the original story was written by Paul Joseph Watson, the one about last year's concrete cross taking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it linked to the Greek City Times article, which doesn't say that the coexistence group tore down that cross.
Right, right, right.
But they are able to muddy it enough through, like, you have to take two links
to figure out
any truth.
Which you won't do.
No, but Ben Warren, the person who wrote the current InfoWars article, is totally willing to just make the conjecture that this coexistence group tore down that cross. He does say that explicitly in the article, and there is nothing in any of the Greek sources that in any way back that up, or even insinuate it, really. InfoWars is really bad at their jobs. But I know that that is kind of the premise of our show, but I like these concrete examples that are just like, this is bad reporting.
Right.
On a indisputable level. Take all of
take all the politics, take all of that, take all of it out of that. That is literally just you being shitty at your job. I don't even care what direction this is towards. It's not even a right-left thing. It's like, if it was a Project Camelot thing, we'd still be like,
you're just reporting something you don't have the right to report.
Yeah, you're just bad at it.
So, Jordan, earlier in this episode, we talked, you accused me of teasing, and I was a little bit, because the idea of Paul Joseph Watson showing up in Austin is absurd. It's crazy. It doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to excuse it as being, well, it's just CPAC. And when I saw all of the people posting that Paul Joseph Watson was in studio, because some people in our group on Facebook had posted pictures of him in studio, I thought, like, hey, let's not get weird about this. It's CPAC. He was showing up there to be weird. No big deal.
Now it's time to get weird about
this. When I listened to the March 6th episode, I figured out I know exactly why he was there. And
custody hearing.
No.
Oh.
This is the end of InfoWars.
Whoa!
This is a mic down clip.
You know, I really pushed you, I guess, 8-9 years ago to start your own Twitter, start your own YouTube, to get out on air. And I have encouraged you, just because of the way the world works, to go out and do more and actually do your own thing. I know we tried to do some TV stuff in England, and that fell through, trying to herd cats. But very soon, you're going to be launching your own site, your own operation. We're very excited about that. And, you know, that's what successful operations do, is they spawn new things. And I think in time, you will also spawn apprentices as well, and that your only hope is that they will grow up to be just as strong and successful as you've been, or as I've been.
He had to make it about himself at the end.
Oh, of course.
As successful as I've been.
Good for him. Good on him.
Petty.
Yeah.
Paul Joseph Watson's going solo. He's done. He's out.
That is bananas.
PJW's starting his own thing.
This is the end of InfoWars.
Yep.
Holy shit.
Well, I think it's a smart move on Paul's part, because Alex has already said I might have to lay you off.
Yeah, no.
Fucking start your own thing. You don't need him. You didn't need him for years. So Paul Joseph Watson is in basically to soft launch his own.
The goodbye. Yeah. He's on his goodbye tour.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Holy shit, Dan, this is the end of InfoWars.
And so CPAC.
Who's going to read for him?
Him coming to CPAC was, I think, probably an excuse to come to do this in studio, and then also probably tie up some loose ends or whatever. Because Paul is even saying, like he says on this episode, this is going to launch in the next 2 weeks. Like, it's immediate.
No, this is...
I'm done with this. Done with InfoWars.
This is Dwayne Wade's Miami Heat last season, man. He's doing the whole... he's saying goodbye.
But
he's
it's not... But that's a season.
Yeah, it's not a
this
season.
Is
I get
much
it.
Less
I get it.
This is
a weekend. This is the All-Star weekend
for
him.
But if you're Paul Joseph Watson, you've been working for this guy for this long, And you recognize the signs on the wall. You see the writing on the wall. You see, huh, it's bad to be tied to him. His brand is all these old people. There's no real engagement there. People who are younger do like me. Why am I still talking to him?
It's
because of history, and he's doing lip service to Alex by showing up to do this last hurrah.
It's
getting the band together one last time, that kind of goodbye, and he's going back to fucking London, and he is going to...
And he's going to stay there.
You bet. And he's going to create his own media empire. He's talking about, like, bringing in some other writers. Love to see who he gets. And I think
Jerome Corsi's available.
Yes. He's a free agent.
He's a free agent.
So
Roger Stone doesn't have a gag order in Britain.
That's true. There's a lot of people at InfoWars who are probably also looking to jump ship. All of them.
It would be a good idea.
He could completely poach the entire operation so fucking easily.
Easily.
Including funders.
Yeah.
Like the people who pay Alex's.
Fucking including Alex if Alex didn't have an ego too big.
I think that this is the, like, I know that I maybe speak too loosely sometimes. This is it. Like, Alex is done.
This really is it.
This is, like, losing Paul Joseph Watson is so crucially devastating.
This is fucking momentous.
Like, I don't see how he exists in the future. Because Paul Joseph Watson was really the only thing that tied him to a demographic that wasn't stodgy old people who are still mad about OKC.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
And we don't have a black president anymore, so he can't jump on that.
Can't galvanize that shit.
No. Nope.
I really don't see how his brand survives leaving the one, like, without the one person who kind of connected him to people under 50.
Yeah.
I really don't understand. I might be wrong. My projections might be. Maybe more people like Caitlyn Bennett than I know, but it's crazy.
I don't know who she is, so the answer is probably not.
She was that Kent State gun girl who now works at InfoWars.
Fuck off.
Right. But, like, to me, when I hear this, I'm like, this is a profoundly big, big thing. And it also cheapens the fact that he's there for 2 days. The first day, they spend a lot of their time talking about how Michelle Obama has a dick. Why did you waste that time with your guy knowing that the next day on air you were going to announce he's going solo? He's done. And they keep doing this thing where they're like, we'll still collaborate. Which, of course, everyone does.
Yeah.
When they're breaking up.
I don't like the idea of them claiming that Michelle has a dick being there. Like the end of Ocean's 11 moment where they're all standing around the fucking fountain.
No.
Thinking that they're going to get back to, like,
it's not that.
Look at what we did together. Now we're going to part ways. I don't like that at all.
It's not that. It's what Alex needed to do to try and not deal with the reality that Paul was leaving and that he had pushed Paul out. He had said repeatedly on air, we can't afford to pay his salary. I might have to lay him off. If you're Paul Joseph Watson, what are you going to do?
Go away!
Fight for yourself. Create your own thing. You don't need him anymore. You haven't needed him for years. So do your own fucking thing. And that will destroy Alex. It's going to be a disaster. I don't know what he's going to do.
Man, that is fucking heavy. This is heavy.
I told you that this episode would rock the foundations of the info.
I don't know.
You thought I was talking shit when I started this episode.
Well, you've said that there have been a lot of things that would rock the foundation of the info war many times before.
Some of them have been accurate. Some of them, I was joking. This time, I was not.
This is huge. This is huge.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Alex is fucked. Because nobody he has on staff is even close to as popular or as good at propaganda as Paul Joseph Watson.
Right.
Like, these people, the rest of the schlubs that he's got, it's, God, can you imagine how
this
pissed
is,
off he
this,
is?
Is this the color of money? Are we watching Paul Newman and Tom Cruise break up? Is that what's happening right now? Are they going to compete against each other in the near future?
No, I don't think so. I think Paul is going to become the new this-centric propaganda outlet. And I think Alex is probably, I think he's going to phase out.
You think so?
I
don't think Paul is gonna, like, say what you want, but the hardline right-wing lunatics that Alex Rose Quartz, Steven Universe, are not going to follow a British Ponce. It's just not gonna happen.
I think they will.
I don't think they will.
I disagree.
I don't know. This is going to be so fascinating.
I mean, who does Alex have as sources who wouldn't still fuck around with Paul?
No, of course not. But who in America is going to listen to just Paul?
I mean, there's tons of people who do. He's very popular.
I really am in denial about that.
He's very popular.
He can't be popular.
I know.
He's the worst.
It seems very mysterious.
He's awful.
I understand that. His information is lacking. His presentation is stilted and weird, frenetic, constant cuts in the camera.
Yeah.
It's very hard to watch.
No, it's disorienting.
But there are tons of people who do like it. The idea that he won't be able to create something successful, I think, is foolish.
I don't see how Alex doesn't turn this into a professional wrestling match.
Nah, I don't think he can. I think he knows
he's bested.
He has created his own, to some extent. I can't stress enough how much this feels like the beginning of the end. I know that from a completely analytical perspective, losing Paul Joseph Watson is a crucial blow to him. But then he says this, and this really, to me, sounds like someone who's quitting.
But I just want to say something about this broadcast. For all the persecution and all the lies that get told about us, I get to know listeners like you and viewers like you. I get to meet you on the streets. And I get to know people like Tommy Robinson. He calls me up at midnight. I call him at 6 a.m. I get to know all these people. I get to know the best journalists, the best fathers, the best activists. I get to know the people that don't back down to censorship. I get to know the Paul Watsons and the Laura Loomers, and I get to know the Owen Schroyers and all this great crew. I get to know you. I don't care about some stupid Hollywood meeting or, you know, being at a party that Brad Pitt's at. That's empty and nothing. But, man, I get to talk to Tommy Robinson. See?
That, to me, sounds like someone doing their last off-brand night, like, late-night show.
Yeah.
Someone who's doing, hey, look, everything has been really tough, and this sucks in a lot of ways. People are really mad at me, but it's all been worth it because I've got to meet you. And we know that Alex doesn't think that. He fucking hates his fans. He runs away from them on the streets.
That's crazy.
That's disingenuous in so many ways. And the idea of, I know the best journalists, Laura Loomer, that sort of shit. It's all so insincere. But what's behind it, the feeling of it, is I'm done. And maybe it's because if I had to guess.
That's not even I am going to fight for Jeopardy even through stage 4 pancreatic
that
cancer.
That video is amazing. That Alex
That's
Trebek
so,
video is so amazing.
Trebek is.
The ability to make that joke is so crucial. That's clutch shit.
Yeah.
The idea that he came in, if you haven't seen the video, go watch it. But Alex Trebek came in and he was like, I don't want anybody else to tell you this news. I believe in the connection that we have with each other, and I don't want to hide anything. I am dealing with stage 4 cancer that kills most people. I'm going to fight that, and I'm going to win. And then he makes the joke, I have to, because I have 3 years left on my contract that I have to work.
He's so good.
That's amazing.
So good.
Deadpanned.
Yep.
It
everything you wanted Trebek to ever be, You thought you knew him. You thought you knew him from the game show, but you know there's always that distance. But in this personal video, you're like, you are what I've always believed you.
It's so validating of the struggle that he's in, the humanity, the humor of it is just so great.
Yeah,
this is the reverse. Because Alex isn't dealing with anything other than his own consequences.
As in America, we don't deserve Trebek's.
We deserve Alex Joneses. That's who we deserve.
And Alex is
We're
dealing,
grateful
but
for
dealing
our Trebek.
With the same existential crisis, but with less class and with less aplomb and
infinitely.
Less reason to have an existential crisis.
Right.
Because outlook does not look good for Trebek. And also, I mean, I guess legally the outlook doesn't look good for Alex, but the reality is, like, I think when I look at this, I think that Alex made a crucial mistake. I mean, obviously, 3-4 years ago, talking to Roger Stone. That was a big mistake, and we've seen that play out.
I think every human being who's ever talked to Roger Stone later on found out it was a mistake.
But I think a lot of people have been able to skirt the real consequences of it in ways that Alex has not. He gave Roger way too much control over his editorial process and the entire operation. But I think Alex fucked up when he included Paul in the people I could lose. Like, when he had those conversations on air and was talking about, like, we're losing money, we need you guys to donate, I'm going to lay off Roger and Paul. Like, that sort of thing is the only excuse someone like Paul needs. He's been waiting for years to be like, I don't need your dumb anchor to be attached to me. I'm not banned from Twitter. I'm not banned from social media. I've been, like, I'm just loyal to you. You've given me an excuse to start my own operation.
Right.
So now he does. And that, Paul Joseph Watson leaving hurts Alex in a way that no ban, no censorship ever could. Because it takes away the only competent player in his operation. There are other people who can do, like, I don't know why.
Shitty reporting.
Wrestling's on my mind. So, like, there's other people who can do, like, 2-star matches. Or whatever. They can do fine. You know, whatever. Millie Weaver can distract people for 20 seconds or whatever. But Paul Joseph Watson was the only guy who was coming in with, like, I understand the craft. I understand propaganda.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm helping you. You and I work in a symbiotic way. And without him, he's completely fucked. And I think when you hear stuff like that, when he's talking about, like, it's so great. I mean, how much I love doing this. And, like, that's what I hear when I talk to people who quit stand-up.
A
lot of failure. It was a lot of failure, but it was so worth it because that one show was really great. And, it you know, because I did this, I got to meet Eddie Pepitone. Like, that sort of thing. Like, you hear...
I did get to meet Eddie Pepitone.
I have, too.
He's great.
Of course.
He's fantastic.
I'm not saying he's not.
I'm not going to cry.
Bad example that I used, but it is...
I know. No, it's just fun.
It's because he was accessible at the festival circuit.
I know. He's fun.
He's very there. He's around and also a very nice person.
He's a great guy.
So everyone has a story of meeting him.
Yeah.
But the point is, like, that's the story you get. Like, it's been years of hitting my head against a wall, but it was worth it for X, Y, or Z.
I believe he wants to quit. I agree. I agree with you on like 99% of what you're saying. All I'm saying is that there will be one last ride, and that is going to be the fight against his protege.
No.
This is fucking...
Alex is smarter than that.
This is Obi-Wan and Anakin. This is the whole situation.
Alex is smarter than that.
He's going to get taken down.
Nope. He's smarter than that.
He is not smarter than that.
It's not smarter, but he's crafty enough.
I agree, he's crafty enough. I also think that he is incapable of avoiding his base instincts, which are to attack something that is a threat to him. So even now, while we're talking about him allowing PJ Dubs to go, in 3 months, he doesn't have a fucking memory. He doesn't have the capability. Like when we talked about the Sandy Hook episode, in two days, he went from a victim of the Sandy Hook massacre to talking to him to saying that the whole thing was staged.
The difference is that Alex knows what's up right now. He knows what's up. Like, in that circumstance, yes, it was quick and it moved fast and it was fucked up. Alex knows exactly what's going on right now. And it's something he's probably been trying to avert for a very long time, which is Paul wants to leave. He now can't control that. Paul is leaving. He can't he can't fight him. I understand where you're coming from.
Right.
He's Alex is oppositional defiant as the day is long.
Yes.
And he's self, sustaining. He's always into preservation of, like, my own position.
Right.
But if Paul, in his media operation that he starts, is still putting the same kind of toxic shit that Paul has been forever while he works with InfoWars and is more extreme, like, as he probably will be, as he becomes like, I'll spread my wings.
Of course.
I think that Alex will recognize that as, that's an extension of me. Isn't that awesome that it's doing really well? He gets mad at people like Joe because Joe's just a friend of his. The Joe Rogan Experience isn't an offshoot of his podcast. But whatever Paul does, Alex will be able to claim ownership of, if only in his own mind. So I don't think he wants to fight that. As long as it's in line enough with stuff. And Alex, I think he wants to quit. I think I would too. Like, I think that he'll be able to maybe settle these lawsuits and whatever and not be financially completely devastated. Still walk away with a couple of dozens of millions of dollars. Liquidate whatever dumb shit he's bought. Live a fucking great life with his wife and kids.
Right.
And then Paul Joseph Watson keeps the fire?
I agree with where you're coming from.
It all works out perfectly for him.
I agree.
It is the riding off into the sunset.
I agree. I guess I just disagree in that I think Alex is a pathological lunatic to the point where I think if Rex started an InfoWars2.com
or Honor Roll,
Alex would try and destroy him. Like, there's a certain amount of that of, like, I want you to succeed, but I don't want you to succeed as much as I do.
I mean, there will always probably be some petty jealousy. There's no doubt about that.
He's a petty motherfucker.
But I think he also is probably getting to the point where he recognizes he's not good at doing what he does anymore.
Also,
like, he's not.
According to himself, he's dying.
Yeah.
You know.
But, I mean, whatever his physical stuff is, like, he's struggling. Like, he's not as good at his job as he once was. And Paul Joseph Watson is a good 15, 20 years younger than him. So, like, let that guy carry the mantle of the... What?
Paul Joseph Watson is, like, 21? Paul Joseph Watson is, like, 5 years younger than Alex.
He's probably...
How old is Alex? Alex is not that much older.
He's 45.
Yeah, there's no way that that Paul Joseph Watson is 20.
He's probably 30 if he's a day. I would say he's about 30.
Paul Joseph Watson is younger than me?
Yeah, probably.
Hell no. No chance.
It's hard to say. Yeah, I don't know. He's early 30s at best. But either way, he still looks better than Alex. Even if he was 55.
Even if he's 55. Agreed. I agree with that.
He has. I would say what I was trying to express is that he has a lot more life in him than.
Yes,
Alex.
That's a way better way of putting it.
Yeah, he is a spring chicken compared to Alex, and so I just think that if you are someone who works from a rational perspective, even if you're a craven propagandist, there's two things. One is, how do I maximize my profit? I think Alex maximizes things by getting out and still getting a cut in some way, like trying to bully advertisers who may go to Paul through Alex into him getting a cut or something like that. Whatever arrangement. Who knows what that would be. Like, that would be the best thing for Alex. You got to get out. Or even if Paul Joseph Watson, whatever show he ends up creating, will probably be on the Genesis Communication Network, and Alex will get a finder's fee for that. Be a piece of the thing. And then if you consider that it's just a purely ideological thing, then Alex's smart move would be give up, let Paul take the mantle. You have already mentored him as best you can. He will fly with wings that you don't have.
Yeah.
There's no downside to quitting now and letting Paul just, like, do it.
Right.
Other than ego, But the ego.
There we go. Like the ego petting. I agree with every reason that you have stated. I agree with everything that you have said. I would even say if we were to talk to Alex, this is both of our advice to him. I don't think he is capable of taking it.
That last clip makes me think that he has been forced into taking it.
You think so?
Yes. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but we'll see. I'm fascinated to see what happens. But until we find out, we have a website.
Do we have a website?
Yeah, we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
Okay, but say you wanted to find us on a place where you couldn't find Alex Jones, like a social media site, like Twitter.
Any of them. We're on Twitter at knowledge_fight.
How about Facebook?
Yeah, we're there.
Do we have a group on Facebook?
Alex can't, but we got one. We're also on iTunes. Alex isn't there.
We are on iTunes. Alex isn't there either.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that that brings us to where we need to be, and that's to say...
Paul Joseph Watson probably hasn't killed anybody.
Wrong.
Benicio Del Toro also probably hasn't killed anybody. Maybe he has.
I bet he has.
Well, we can't prove it, but Alex technically probably has.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.